It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. We are here for the last evening in Madison, Wisconsin, and what a week it has been. History in the making. And I gotta tell you, it's not gonna end here. Last night we spent the evening sleeping in the Capitol, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, the place just erupted with the shouts of shame, 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 as the Republicans here in the state of Wisconsin have, much like going back to the pay raise thing, in the middle of the night, passed a piece of legislation not popular. The difference here is you had thousands of people in the Capitol, as they're doing it, thousands of people watching on TV screens, in their pajamas, watching every single move. And last night we were bunkered down in Representative Brett Halsey's office doing the program live from there. And, you know, just the atmosphere was electric. And as I look back over our week here, the thing that grabs me the most is just how nice the people are. And, you know, their slogan here in the state of Wisconsin is forward. And, you know, the more I think about it, it should be thank you. At every turn, that's all I heard people saying to their representatives, thank you. I mean, imagine that. You know, all we're used to hearing is people beating up on their representatives, calling them idiots, calling them names. But here in Wisconsin, the people who have come to this place, they see that the fight that the Democrats are putting up, and it's a valiant effort. But at the end of the day, it's going to be national pressure that's going to change this or not. And it's going to be one or two Republicans. You know, this isn't the end of the road for this bill, even though there's some questions to its legality, questions to whether it was passed along proper lines. That will be coming out in the days ahead. There's also some talk of, did people vote for folks who weren't there? Did you have some Republicans answering for folks who weren't there? That may come out in the coming days. So a lot of things to talk about last night in the coming days. And we will be back in the studio on Monday, looking forward to interacting with you and talking about this whole week that we've been here, because it's just been remarkable. And, you know, throughout the week, I've been talking about this theme of, this is what democracy looks like. This is how we should be running the country. People coming together in their house, which, you know, the people here honestly and truthfully believe that the Capitol is their house. And if you watch them walking around in their pajamas and with their curlers in their hair and all of that, it truly is. I walked into the bathroom, there were six people brushing their teeth. Definitely their house, but The other side of that, they're taking care of it. And then really just the most responsible of fashions. You know, if this was a riot, if this is chaos, sign me up. Because this is the first chaotic riot that I've ever been to where they had child care and where they had a health facility for the people who were who may have some trouble. There's a 91-year-old woman being pushed around, you know, around the Capitol here, and people were, you know, taking pictures of with her, and just, you know, amazing stuff. Now, back home on the home front, tomorrow I understand there's a rally to show support for the folks here. There's supposed to be a huge rally here. They're expecting 100,000 plus. But back home in Harrisburg tomorrow at noon, the rally to save the American dream. Now, this the rally there is really just to say, hey, we support the folks in Wisconsin. We support the right of people to collectively bargain. Understand, we're not fighting this fight in Pennsylvania. Not yet. And if our governor and the really the crazies in the House, I don't think the governor wants these kind of fights. I think it's a handful of crazies in the House who want to push this and want to run down this road. But if they do, this is the kind of response that has to happen. This is the kind of reaction that we need from the citizens of our state to hold back these really radical changes. And that's what this guy's trying to do, all in one fell swoop, a very, very radical change. And if you've heard that phone call, and I suggest everybody listen to Walker's phone call with the imitation David Koch. It's really amazing in that he says he's never spoken with David Koch before, but yet the manner at which all of this information just flows so easily off of his tongue leads me to believe that that's BS too. Because if you've never spoken to somebody, would you really respond to, hey, we were thinking about sending in some troublemakers? Would you respond to, well, you know, we had thought of that, but we decided that a ruckus might make us do something? Do you really think that that's how that would be? No. Do you think, really honestly and truthfully, if you've never had a conversation with someone, you would have the will to ask them to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to push your agenda, which the Koch brothers are doing here in the state of Wisconsin, $320,000 to support Simple Scotty's agenda? And it's really an anti-worker, anti-family agenda. You know, it's not just about the collective bargaining that he's stealing. It's the health care for low-income working people. It's privatizing their energy sector. It's a whole bunch of little things that, you know, I haven't even gotten into. They're changing the way, you know, of course they've got a gay bash. That's got to be in there somewhere. And you know, all of this really toxic right-wing wet dream legislation. And he thought he was going to get it all in one swoop, and he probably would have, had it not been for that really stupid comment of, we're going to send in the National Guard. So last night, the Republicans voted to pass this turd, and the place erupted. So we woke up. I was expecting the police to come in with their sticks out and start pushing people out the door. I really was expecting that. In fact, I had told Jake to take the stuff, and if it happens, take the stuff outside, because I was going to sit down with the other people and be drug out. Didn't happen, but you got the feeling that maybe. My question is because the police have been so nice and so helpful and so on the side of the protesters, because the protesters have been so nice to them. You want to talk about community outreach. You want to talk about a partnership. This is the kind of relationship police have been dying to have with citizens for generations. Now you've got this kind of symbiotic relationship where the people who are protesting and standing up are actually benefiting the cops as well. That's the kind of stuff that makes me wonder if Simple Scotty says, hey, start bashing them over the head, the cops just say, not going to do it. Especially tonight, because I believe it's cop night at the Capitol, where all the policemen will be sleeping in the Capitol Rotunda as well. So that should be interesting to see what the decision there is. But anyway, they came up, they voted, and the people were really ticked off because of the way they did it. Now go back to the pay raise. Harken back to the pay raise where, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning they tried to ram this through like thieves in the night. Same scenario. Same exact scenario, only people were watching. So they were visibly upset, and representatives gave their speeches saying, hey, you know, we need to stick together. We need to stay peaceful because, you know, temperatures were running high. And then they started singing. They started singing the Star Spangled Banner. And, you know, just an amazing moment. And I think it's the biggest group hug I've ever seen. Everybody was holding arms. Everybody was in this giant group hug because I think they know the significance of the moment. I think they understand exactly what happened that moment. Because I think across the state today, across the country today, they're looking at the Republican Party a little bit differently. They're looking at the Republicans and going, hey, this isn't the rule of law. And while the right wing keeps saying, well, you know, the Democrats left town, does that mean that you can jump off the bridge too? They're supposed to be the Republicans are supposed to be the law and order police. They're supposed to be the guys on the white horses, right? Isn't that what they keep telling you? Not in this case. These people, I do believe, broke the law, and we will find that out in the coming days, weeks and months, and it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight. As we move forward, and tomorrow, supposed to be a huge event. We look forward to getting back in the studio, taking your phone calls. Again, over the weekend, if you want to email us, rick@thericksmithshow.com. All of our stuff is up on the web, so you can listen to the programs while we've been here. It has been a great week, and we really, really are glad we came. Just an amazing time. And history in the making, and I think the folks here realize that. We're going to take a quick break.
Save the USA is drowning in craft and lies. Save the USA and resume the ties it binds. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As the Wisconsin Assembly wrapped up debate and drew closer to a vote on the Republican bill gutting collective bargaining for public workers, pro-working family protesters kept their vigil at the Capitol, and protests were also held in 17 Wisconsin cities outside of Madison. Republicans succeeded in getting the Assembly to vote and pass the collective bargaining bill early Friday morning. But to become law, Wisconsin's Senate must also pass it, and the 14 Wisconsin Democratic senators remain in Illinois, effectively blocking GOP efforts to wipe out public worker collective bargaining. Wisconsin State Patrol officers, meanwhile, were ordered to the homes of some Wisconsin state senators to look for them Thursday, but came up empty. Firefighters and police unions continue to stand shoulder to shoulder with other Wisconsin public workers and their allies in this fight. Police presence has been beefed up at the state capitol in Madison, and entrance and exit from the Capitol building is more tightly controlled than when this remarkable protest began 11 days ago. As the Reverend Jesse Jackson marched arm in arm with Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin and firefighters through Wisconsin's state capitol this week in defense of collective bargaining, he told reporters it reminded him of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s final efforts to help public sanitation workers in Memphis in 1968.
Just the joy to see workers in a nonviolent, disciplined way fighting back for his basic ass economic justice.
While Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's budget repair bill specifically targets public sector workers, the rallies during the last 11 days have witnessed a strong show of solidarity from private sector workers. Jesse Russell reports.
Ann Schwartz is an electrician and member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. She explained why it's so important for her to join the rallies.
It does affect everyone, and I live here in Madison. My nieces and nephews attend Madison Public Schools. If I get sick, I go to a hospital here, the nurses' unions, go to the UW, the nurses' unions.
Iron worker Pete Stern also works in the private sector.
We weren't targeted in this legislation specifically. It's an attack on unions, and it's targeting against public sector brothers and sisters. And an injury to one is an injury to all. And we're standing in solidarity. We've been here all week since this started with our members, and we're showing our support, and we're standing with them because it is like dominoes.
In the squares of the city, in the shadow of the steeple.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
I see my people. Some are grumbling, and all are wondering if this land's still made for you and me. Tell them!
We're smart policy, and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin, our last day here, our last broadcast from the state capital of Wisconsin, where just amazing stuff. Last night we spent sleeping in the capital. Amazing is the only word I can come up with, especially with all of the shenanigans that went on. But you know, to talk a little bit more in a broader sense, to come outside of Madison and see how this right-wing attack is going to affect the rest of the nation, I've got our good friend from the Campaign for America's Future, Isaiah Poole. Isaiah, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, and thank you for all the good reporting that you're doing out of Wisconsin.
You know, it's just been remarkable. For those who haven't been here to see democracy in action, to see the people have come together and they've figured out all the things that they need and how to take care of it. It's just phenomenal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things I think your listeners understand this, that there is a broad fight against the middle class that is taking place in some of these state capitals. It's taking place in Washington, where we saw the House of Representatives ram through $60 billion worth of budget cuts, most of which really directly attack the priorities of working families. And the attack on collective bargaining is part of a big picture that reflects the conservative disdain for what average people want and need from their government.
Right. You know, I look at all this cutting cheerleading that's going on, starting on the national level, ending up at the state level. What I think most people don't get is, you know, all of this high profile, oh, we're chopping, we're slashing and burning. All of that stuff rolls downhill till at the end of the road, the individual at the bottom, the average everyday taxpayer, either is going to pay considerably more for local services, or they're not going to get them at all.
That's absolutely true. And the thing that is really stunning about this is that I reviewed a number of news stories for a post that I posted on ourfuture.org. Friday morning, which has the headline, Five Ways Conservatives Slashonomics Arms Us All. And in reading some of the news stories, you invariably get to the quote from the conservative representative of the district who's coming out of a town hall meeting or is meeting a group of reporters. He says something to the effect that, we've got to make tough choices. Well, flash back to something that Congressman George Miller said on the House floor about a week ago, and there's a wonderful YouTube video about this. It's not tough to victimize women and children. That's not tough. If you really want to show your manhood, go after millionaires.
Yep.
Go after the big guys. Go after the people who are your own size and bigger.
Go after the people who could punch you in the mouth.
I've spent the last few days going through almost line item by line item on what the conservatives in the House did. And I've got to tell you, there were no there's very little there that gets at the comfortable people in society, the people who are secure and comfortable. But there's cut after cut after cut that is directed at people who are marginalized in the society. The people have to struggle to get health care. The people have to struggle to get food. The people have to struggle to get housing. And I don't know why in the hell we think that we are a great nation. And we target these people. And we say to those who have money. And we say to those who have power, we must give you more money and we must give you more power.
Well, there's only one word.
Why do we think, I'm sorry I'm getting so angry about this, but I cannot believe that we have sunk to this level.
Well, there's only one word, lobbyist. The poor and the children and the women that you're talking about, they don't have lobbyists. The Koch brothers, they've got tons of lobbyists. And as you said, you know, they're not going to pick on somebody who can punch them in the mouth back. They're going to pick on the easy. They're going to pick on the poor and the downtrodden. And look, they want to take this country back 100 years. They want to go back to the good old days of the 1890s and 1900 so that they can exploit workers and women and children. It's just in their DNA. They want to go back to those, to the good old days when we could send children into the mines and make women work to death in the looms. With no maximum hours or no minimum wage. That's what they want.
I think the one bright spot that you've been in the midst of is that there are enough people who are seeing through this that perhaps we could lurch the country back toward a conversation about what our values really ought to be and how our spending choices and our government should what values they should actually reflect. Because I tell you, the success that the right has had in taking a group of people and convincing them that because they have been screwed by the private sector, because they've lost their pensions, they've lost, their salaries have not kept up, their health care, has, not kept up and they've had to pay more for health insurance, and so on, that because they've lost so much that public sector workers should also lose, when the real conversation should be, how can we all gain? Not how much should we all lose, but how much should we all be gaining? How much more we should have in order to get this economy back on track?
And that's the conversation that they're having here in Madison. And that's the one of the statements that they continually make. You know, why tear us down? Why not lift you up? And to be honest, I've met almost no one. I think I've met two people who think Walker's doing the right thing, and they were carrying around with those T-Twizzler flags. And you know, the majority of people here, and the vast majority, support these folks, support collective bargaining, all of the small businesses that we've come across. It's an amazing scene here. And what I'm hoping, and this is what I've been saying all week, I'm hoping that this becomes an epidemic and this mentality of togetherness and community spread across this country. I think Scott Walker has done the middle class the greatest service he could possibly do by grabbing them by the shoulders and just shaking them and saying, look, I'm trying to stick it to you.
Well, I think what has given us an opportunity to do, and a lot of us, not just us here at the Campaign for America's Future, but other organizations, has given us an opportunity to talk about things like, what are public sector workers making? As it turns out, the average public sector worker, with a college education, and most public sector workers are, you know, have high-level education. There aren't public sector workers flipping hamburgers. Most public sector workers are you know, fairly sophisticated people. And, you know, for their talent and their education, they don't make as much as they would make in the public sector. And it's given us an opportunity to really, you know, talk about that and talk about what they should be making.
You know, it's just, It's interesting that you bring that up, Isaiah. I was over at a gas station today having my oil changed, and the guy who owns the place was complaining that his last customer is a state worker who's going to retire, and he's going to retire to do the exact same job he's doing now at almost twice the pay. So what you're saying is just spot on with what reality is. And I talked to the gas station guy, and I said, you know, hey, the state is privatizing this job. In the private sector, they pay more. So why would you want to privatize that job? And he sat back and he goes, you know, I didn't think of it that way.
Well, there you go. And, you know, we've seen the same thing here in Washington with some of the privatization experiments that were done in the Bush administration, where if you look at the Government Accountability Office studies now, you know, the majority of those studies of those privatization schemes show that the costs were actually higher.
Yeah, I mean, and I've been asking for almost 6 years on the air now for anyone to contact me and let me know what privatization scheme has won and that it's done what it was supposed to have won and that it saved me money, too. And no one's been able to call me and show me that that scheme. There's a lot of them out there, but there's no success for you and me. There's success for people like the Koch brothers, who you look at this bill, might have an opportunity of picking up 37 state-owned power facilities.
Right. Well, you know, the one thing that we've got to communicate is number one, if this is particularly true of education, which is why one of the things I'm very concerned about, we want our best people to go into education, to go into teaching. We want real talent there, because every study I've seen recently shows that we are rapidly falling behind in the global economy. And so we need to get our children fast-tracked in terms of being able to do math and science and knowing how to do research and to do the kinds of stuff that we're going to need to be able to do if we're going to accomplish President Obama's vision of out-innovating the rest of the world. And you're not going to attract talent in an atmosphere in which teachers are demonized and public service generally is demonized, where there is such an adversarial relationship between the government and the workforce, and where the salaries are less than par.
You know, you bring up education, and we talked about a little stat last night that the five states where collective bargaining is illegal for public workers, they're in near the four are at the very bottom. Four states, and then one is Virginia's number 44. But, you know, number 50, number 49, 48, 47, those are, you know, your illegal states. Wisconsin has number 2 for their scores for SATs and ACTs. Because they invest in education and they have qualified, well-paid teachers. Pretty simple stuff.
Right, exactly. Well, one of the things that we're girding for is the budget fight that's going to take place in the Senate next week. And our call to the Senate is really not to compromise on this. I mean, I think the Obama administration has gone far enough. Now, I don't know what the outcome will be. I mean, I think there's a lot of pessimism here in Washington that, in fact, there will be some sort of government shutdown. But if you actually read what was being proposed to be cut, and you compare that to what could be changed in order to close some of our budget gap. I mean, I think people would say, well, in fact, the polls already show that a lot of these budget cuts, the majority of the public doesn't support. they support the theory of cutting the budget, but they don't support a lot of these specific items.
Yeah, I'm in favor of cutting portions of the budget as well. I just don't want to cut food for children, and I don't want to cut education, and I don't want to cut programs that help the poor. I'm sorry, the homeless. I'm just not. If we're this grand Christian nation, I'm sorry, I'm not in favor of that.
How many people do you know, though, would think that at this time of budget austerity, that we are to be spending money for the Army to be posting its logo on NASCAR cars?
Well, I didn't see that. I'm not a NASCAR fan. They do that?
Yeah. And, in fact, there was a $2 million line item that they, one of the Democrats, I forget which Democrat, during the budget discussion last week had offered to say, we'll take the money that the Army uses for NASCAR promotions, we would cut that out of the budget. The Republicans rejected that.
That's amazing.
So that things like that are still in the budget.
Beautiful stuff. So let me ask you before we wrap this up. Next week's the big showdown, I guess. Where are you leaning in this? I'm thinking eventually someone has to cave, because I don't think the Republican on in here in Wisconsin. I don't think they can afford another defeat.
Well, one of the scenarios that has been put out there is a scenario in which the Republicans do a semi-cave. They will allow a very short-term extension to be in place, so that they can keep these fights over and over going throughout 2011. Now, the biggie is going to be the debt ceiling, and the debt ceiling fight comes up in April or May. Right now, the government, when we talk about a government shutdown, that is simply because the budget authority was timed to expire on March 4th, and that's a simple extension. The debt ceiling is a whole other matter,
right,
where you're saying to the federal government that you don't have the authority to borrow any more money. That's the kind of thing that could have huge repercussions globally.
Well, we will see how that turns out. We've got a lot of problems ahead, Isaiah, and we look forward to hearing from you folks at the Campaign for America's Future. Again, check out their website at ourfuture.org. Always great talking with you, Isaiah. Look forward to talking to you next Friday.
All right, take care.
All righty, we're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
I ain't never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Let's play a game called Washington Budget Whackers Go Wacky. Unfortunately, though, it's not a game. Axe-wielding Republicans and Democrats alike are madly whacking at our nation's public programs in a political contest to show which of them is the scroogiest of all. For example, both are going after the very useful program that helps low-income Americans pay the ever-rising cost of heating their homes in the dead of winter. This budget cut will literally cut off the heat to some of the most vulnerable people in our society. But hey, say Congress critters, whose workplace is always kept toasty at taxpayers' expense, everyone must sacrifice. Well, not really everyone. Washington's ferocious axe wielders are sparing assorted corporate subsidies. Take the Market Access Program. Please. It hands $200 million a year to such huge processors and exporters of agricultural commodities as Sunkist and Welch's so they can advertise their products abroad. Hello, these free enterprise giants have plenty of money to do their own ads. Even wackier, this subsidy often is frittered away on nonsense. Last year, the Cotton Council used a big chunk of its $20 million handout from Uncle Sam to promote U.S. cotton sales in India. India? That country produces twice as much cotton as we do and is a major exporter of the stuff, so it has no interest in buying ours. Nonetheless, such outfits are in line for more federal advertising dollars, while poor folks are literally to be left in the cold. Why? It's the perverse power of political money at work. The outfits getting ad subsidies give more than $8 million a year in campaign donations and spend about $10 million a year on lobbyists. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help straighten out this out-of-whack system, contact the Public Interest Research Group at uspirg.org. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell are we fighting for? Just surrender and water it all. Just got time to say your prayer. While you're waiting for the hammer, to fall. Hey!
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show from Madison, Wisconsin. What I'm saying is the front lines of the class war, because this is where the battle is. Don't think that it's not coming to Pennsylvania, because I'm guaranteeing we are going to be seeing this in the coming days. I'm sitting here with Rachel Burke. She's a public school teacher in the Milwaukee area. Rachel, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
What brought you to the Capitol here in Madison?
Well, watching the news, I just knew I couldn't sit at home and do nothing about this. I've been an educator for 11 years, and I feel like I'm here advocating not only for the people in my profession, but also for the students that I teach. So I thought it was really important to be here and be a part of this.
How long have you been here?
I have been here. I came on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and now I'm here again today on Monday.
Are you sleeping overnight with some of the
No,
folks?
I've been driving back and forth.
Because I got to be honest, we came here last night and we saw the people just camped out all over the Capitol. What an amazing sight!
I know, it's unbelievable. Luckily, I'm close enough that I can just drive back.
Yeah, and most of the people I got to speak to, if you think of things in the terms that. Most of the people I know, radical self-interest, the folks here that I've met, they really have no self-interest other than that this is the right thing.
Right. It really is the right thing to do. It's just a matter of what's right and what's wrong, and this is so clearly wrong that it's really troubling to see how some people aren't really seeing the real issue here at what's going on.
Let's talk about that for a second, because everything that I keep seeing is it's about money. You greedy teachers refuse to take pay cuts. You greedy teachers refuse to give in because you're greedy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the meme that I keep seeing. And it's not really about the money, because as I understand, most of the Wisconsin state workers have taken pay cuts, furlough days, a lot of concessions.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't about that.
Right. And I can speak for what's true for the Milwaukee public school employees. And I know that we've given up a lot of increases in pay. We actually had a pay freeze last year in exchange for better benefits. I mean, so we haven't been making, these tremendous raises like people are talking about. We've actually, a lot of teachers have taken a decrease in pay. And when people say greedy teachers, it's really troubling to me, because I know how much time and how much effort that I put into my profession. I didn't get into this profession because of the money. Nobody did. There is no money involved in teaching. I mean, we did it because we love the students we teach, and that we feel like we can make a difference in their lives, which is the reason I became a teacher. And especially for Milwaukee Public Schools, a lot of the children I teach come from, they're underprivileged. And I really felt like I could make a difference in their lives. And I just see that with this bill going through, it's stripping away their rights. I'm not concerned about me. I know that I'll be okay. I'm worried about what this is going to do to them.
You know, I have a friend who is a retired teacher, and she said, before, because she was a teacher before collective bargaining, she said, before we had the right to bargain, we relied on the kids to bring us apples every day for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Because we weren't making enough money to buy our own apples. And as soon as we asked to start buying our own apples, and maybe even a pear every now and again, that's when the public and that's when the politicians started turning against them. It was this moment where they just wanted a little respect and a little a little bit better life.
Right. And this whole issue with this bill going through, you know, Governor Walker keeps saying, oh, it's about the money. You know, we have no money to deal with. It's just, it's not true. If it was just about the money, then this would be over with. All the unions have already made a stand that they will agree to the concessions. I don't care about the money. All the teachers, I work at a school that has 60 teachers on staff. No one's talking about the money. We're all willing to make that sacrifice. We're talking about our rights being stripped away from us with removing collective bargaining. And I think what a lot of people should know, parents at home, is teacher workplace, the atmosphere that the teachers work in is going to directly impact the students' education.
Right.
And I think that people aren't realizing that. I mean, look at all the people out there that have children in schools. Wouldn't you want the person that is spending the most time with your child besides you to have a workplace that's conducive to learning and to working in?
Absolutely.
And I think that people are failing to see what this is really going to do to the education system.
Well, what I fear is going to happen, and I got to be honest, I'm amazed that people get into teaching because of the atmosphere. I mean, where we're at, it's a fairly negative atmosphere. It's all these greedy teachers, and all they want is more, and this whole nine yards. And I go, well, is that an environment where we're going to bring in the best and the brightest, the people who really, like you, have the passion to teach? I got to be honest, I don't know that I would do that.
And I think that's what's going to happen. Who is going to want to be a teacher right now? These people, I have a student teacher in my classroom right now who's reconsidering the profession that she, you know, she's worked 4 years to be a teacher, and now that she's student teaching and seeing this, she's thinking to herself, what am I getting into? We want qualified people teaching our children. You don't want somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. Who in their right mind is going to want to become an educator?
Not me. Not given what's going on in the anger that I see, the venom really mm-hmm. that I see when talking about education. Well, education finds the greedy teachers again. That's just stuck in my mind.
Right.
Because we're going through this whole fight in Pennsylvania about vouchers and that you can't fire teachers, which is ridiculous. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Let's bring that back here to what we're talking about. Because, you know, I look at this massive support that you guys have put together of people just from Wisconsin. I think it's remarkable.
I know. I heard that there were 70,000 people here on Sunday.
I mean, to me, that is just remarkable. And to have almost no real media coverage is, I think, says a lot about our country.
Right. And the media coverage that I haven't even been watching the news, to tell you the truth, because when I do watch it, it's so upsetting to me because it feels like they're not really talking about the real issue. The more people are, you know, that the unions are coming forward and saying the issue isn't the money, the more the media is saying it's the money. And it's just really hard to watch that when you know it's not the truth.
And here's what I don't understand, Rachel, is that, you know, we keep talking about sacrifice. I go back to when we were giving billions of dollars to the banks because, boy, you know, we have to save the banks. And somehow welfare for the banks and the investor class, that's patriotic. But asking for teachers to be able to be paid well, civil servants to be paid reasonably, somehow that's socialism, and that's, you know, the end of our democracy.
Right.
I'm just not getting it.
Well, I don't get it either, so I'm not going to be able to say much more about that because I don't know. I just don't know what the country's coming to. But let me say that it is very inspirational to be here and to see all these people that are fighting for their rights. I mean, this is history in the making. I brought my children here on Saturday to make sure that they were a part of this because this is something that's going to be in the history books.
Absolutely.
And I just think it gives you faith that there are some good people. There's 70,000 good people standing outside.
And the only thing that got media coverage here that I remember is a couple hundred Tea Party people came to what I thought caused trouble. I got to be honest, this has been the nicest protest and the nicest mm-hmm. rally I've ever been to, the cleanest. I saw kids literally on their stomachs wiping the floor with rags last night because they had left a little mess behind. Remarkable.
Well, we have to remember who we're talking about here. Teachers, nurses, police officers, firefighters, we're not exactly here to cause a riot. We're here to show what democracy is and to stand up for our rights. We're not here to cause riots like they're trying to portray it in the media. And when the Tea Party protesters came, everything was peaceful. The only thing I saw were a couple of them in the crowd trying to
whip
instigate
up a frenzy. Sure.
Things. And with the cheers, you couldn't even hear what they were saying because they were just drowned out by everybody
and
else.
That's a great thing because this is a peaceful moment. This is, as you point out, about democracy. And that's what I've always said about unions, one of the most democratic organizations we have in the country. You know, every union I've been a member of, I've had a vote. I've had a right in the say of how things are done. And that's, I think, what you guys are fighting for.
You're right. We are. And I really have faith that the people are going to do the right thing.
Well, let me ask you, Rachel, last question before we wrap up. Where do you see this going in the coming days? I've heard ideas all over the map. What happens after tomorrow? What are your thoughts?
You know, I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but I do believe that if this ends up going through, that the governor is going to end up being recalled. I think that so many people feel so strongly about this that even if he doesn't listen to the majority of the people that are telling him this is wrong, I think that people feel so strongly and so passionate about it that in 300 some days, whenever he can be recalled, I think that he will be. And I think this will be turned over.
I sure hope so. And we will be back here for that because that will be more history in the making.
Yep.
And I think it will send the right message because what I'm afraid of, if this wasn't met with the kind of protest that you're getting, and if this gets through anyway, you're going to see it in Ohio, you're going to see it in Pennsylvania, you're going to see it in New Hampshire, Tennessee, all around the country.
Right, and people think they're not affected. Everyone's going to be affected
by
this.
That's why we're here. Rachel Burke, I appreciate your time. Keep the fight up, and thank you so much for sitting out with me.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
We want the world.
Right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events. Accidents, critical illness, disability, or death? No one can avoid life situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Don't have a phone? Email Rick. At rick@therickSmithShow.com. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
I'm exploding, and I'm free at last. Like Joe Hill and Cesar Chavez, who fought in their own time. Like our brothers and our sisters, up and down that picket line. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin, on the front lines of the class war. This has been a remarkable weekend. It has been a remarkable day. Thousands of people marching, thousands of people in the Capitol Rotunda here. Just an amazing, amazing sight. And the reason that we're here is because I do believe this is going to have to, this is what we're going to have to do in Pennsylvania to hold back some of the insanity that I see coming down the road. It's going to be interesting times. I've got Joseph Jaruski from the UFCW, Local 538, sitting here with me. Joseph, thanks for taking time, buddy.
Thank you for having me.
You know, when you look at the kind of solidarity, the kind of action that's going on here today, you've got to be in awe.
I was in awe on Saturday when we had roughly 100,000 people hit the streets for the working people of the state of Wisconsin. And this goes a lot deeper than just the teachers and nurses and the public service sector. It eventually will run over into the private sector and will definitely affect us in the future.
You know, the analogy that I've used, you know, I've said we're all in the shark tank. And for too long, you know, this, I see this as that catalyst, that moment to bring labor together. Because for too long, you know, we've heard stories of people, we're all in the shark tank, people pushing each other into the shark's mouth. I think we're all realizing that we're all in the shark tank.
We are, and the one thing I can really thank Scott Walker for in this whole ordeal is he woke up labor. And if we don't stick together as a labor organization and stick up for all workers' rights, we're all going to fail. In the state of Wisconsin, this is not about money any longer. We, the teachers and the nurses, have agreed to concessions to help them balance the budget. But he gave away $130 million within the first 10 days of his office, and he turns around and then wants to cut all the workers' pay and their benefit packages, and we aren't going to stand for it.
Well, you know, here at the end of it, you know, it's stealing from those who are struggling to make ends meet and giving to people who really don't need it. But that's been the message for the last several years. I mean, we've had no problem bailing out the big banks. We've had no problem helping those on Wall Street. The, you know, back in the lame duck session in Congress, we saw the Republicans fighting vehemently to make sure that the wealthiest 2% of people in this country got their big bonus, their big Christmas bonus, just so we could get unemployment benefits for the people who were struggling because of the very top. I mean, I'm struggling with that.
It makes absolutely no sense to me or any of my fellow workers. And to be honest with you, I have been the proudest the last week of leading a major labor organization than I've ever been in a labor movement in my entire life. Like I said, I've worked at Kraft Oscar Mayer for 43 years, been the union president for 5 years off and on, and the thing is if we don't get at a grassroots and help build the labor movement in this state, we're all going to lose. My international is fully involved. I've got folks out of Chicago that are fully involved that are up here today with me. And we are going to help the teachers, the school teachers, take the fight to the government.
Yeah, and you know, I look at what Scott Walker's done, and one of the things I got to give him credit for. I don't think he wants it. I think he's opening up labor history to the young people that I see in this capital, to the college students and the high school students and the children, like, you know, people we've talked to here who slept here. They're opening up labor history to those people.
They are. 124 years ago, 7 people died on a picket line to get us an 8-hour work day and a 40-hour work week. Died. And wholesale, this governor thinks he's going to come in and take 124 years of history away from us. The Workmen's Compensation Act was created in the state of Wisconsin.
The very first one. Yep.
Unemployment created in the state of Wisconsin. He wants to come in and gut labor and turn around and give to the rich. We will not stand for it. And
well, you know, I go back to the campaign in Pennsylvania. We're kind of in the same boat that Wisconsin's in, with massive Republican majorities. There's almost nothing the Democrats can do, except for as the 14 heroes that left the state to kind of slow this process down a little bit. It's not about, you know, gridlocking. It's about slowing down a little bit. This onslaught that I see coming in Pennsylvania, but all of them ran on this idea. Kasich in Ohio, your guy here, Corbett in Pennsylvania. They ran on this idea that we need to be more business friendly and we need to run government like business. And I look at what he's doing. This is how business is run. You have one guy at the top, the CEO, the king, if you will, and he dictates from his perch what's going to happen. And that, to me, is not how you run government. It's how they turned into running business. But that's not how we want government run, I don't think.
Well, and even in our organized plants, it's not run like that. I mean, we have a grievance process, and we have an arbitration process. If we disagree with management, we go through arbitrations. And
yeah, but the vast majority of workers, and this is the unfortunate part of this, are not in the private sector, in labor unions. I wish that weren't the case, because I do believe if you had labor law reform in this country, if we had rational laws, you know, maybe the Employee Free Choice Act would have helped. I don't know, and we probably never will find out. But I do believe the natural rate of unionization is about 30%, which is where the public sector workers are, which is why we're seeing the onslaught of attacks. And the reason I asked about business, I said about businesses, because that's what they want to do to the public sector unions. They want to make them emulate the private sector, where the private sector has this hand of intimidation, the ability to, you know, basically crush any person who says anything against them.
I believe that my contracts that I have personally negotiated at the private sector is every bit as good and as rich as the public sector. And they want to keep on throwing the public sector and the nurses, the teachers, under the bus with all these benefits. The teachers have been on a pay freeze for quite a few years here in the state of Wisconsin, underpaid, and still, he wants more, and they can't afford to give any more.
Where does this go from here? I mean, there's going to be the big concert, big rally today. Where do you think this goes tomorrow?
We'll be here tomorrow. We'll be here Wednesday. We'll be here Saturday. I personally will be here next week. I will personally be here next month. We are not going away. If any of the Democrats would come back and this bill would pass, labor in this state of Wisconsin is not going away. We will organize. We will try to orchestrate recalls of Republicans. We got another 10 months, 7 days to recall Scott Walker. We will do what it takes to get our message to the people. But this goes a lot further than organized labor. This will go to people and affect people's benefits and salaries with or without a union. Eventually.
You know, I look at the big news that came out of here on Saturday. Was a couple of Tea Party people showed up. A handful in their buses showed up looking for trouble, in my opinion. That got kind of the media attention. I wanted to reach out to them and say, look, you know, this is exactly what you guys were screaming about. Misuse of government, overreaching government, this idea of a tyrannical government, if you will, because I got to be honest, this is what a dictator would do. This kind of, we're going to do this, we're going to ram it through in the pitch of night, doesn't seem right to me.
His whole philosophy was to introduce a bill a week ago Friday, jam it through, sign it 5 days later, and see what I can do. Well, he got surprised by 14 Democrat senators that I put on a pedestal that...
Good for them. And, you know, this is what I've been saying, that it has to happen in Pennsylvania, this kind of activism, people getting out into the streets, because this is the model of how we're going to stop the negative attacks that I do see coming in the summer.
If it stops in the state of Wisconsin, I believe we can stop it nationwide. If they get it through here in the state of Wisconsin, it's like dominoes.
Ohio's next.
Exactly. And we need to stand strong as labor, and I believe we will put the time, the effort, and the money towards the campaigns that we need to do.
All right, Joseph Jaruski, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Don't let us get sick. Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As the Wisconsin Assembly wrapped up debate and drew closer to a vote on the Republican bill gutting collective bargaining for public workers, pro-working family protesters kept their vigil at the Capitol, and protests were also held in 17 Wisconsin cities outside of Madison. Republicans succeeded in getting the Assembly to vote and pass the collective bargaining bill early Friday morning. But to become law, Wisconsin's Senate must also pass it, and the 14 Wisconsin Democratic senators remain in Illinois, effectively blocking GOP efforts to wipe out public worker collective bargaining. Wisconsin State Patrol officers, meanwhile, were ordered to the homes of some Wisconsin state senators to look for them Thursday, but came up empty. Firefighters and police unions continued to stand shoulder to shoulder with other Wisconsin public workers and their allies in this fight. Police presence has been beefed up at the state capitol in Madison, and entrance and exit from the Capitol building is more tightly controlled than when this remarkable protest began 11 days ago. As the Reverend Jesse Jackson marched arm in arm with Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin and firefighters through Wisconsin's state capitol this week in defense of collective bargaining, he told reporters it reminded him of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s final efforts to help public sanitation workers in Memphis in 1968.
It's the joy to see workers in a nonviolent, disciplined way fighting back for his basic ass economic justice.
While Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's budget repair bill specifically targets public sector workers, the rallies during the last 11 days have witnessed a strong showing of solidarity from private sector workers. Jesse Russell reports.
Ann Schwartz is an electrician and member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. She explained why it's so important for her to join the rallies.
It does affect everyone, and I live here in Madison. My nieces and nephews attend Madison Public Schools. If I get sick, I go to a hospital here. The nurses' unions go to the UW, the nurses' union.
Iron worker Pete Stern also works in the private sector.
We weren't targeted in this legislation specifically. It's an attack on unions, and it's targeting public sector brothers and sisters. And an injury to one is an injury to all. And we're standing in solidarity. We've been here all week since this started with our members, and we're showing our support, and we're standing with them because it is like dominoes.
In the squares of the city, in the shadow of the steeple.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
I see my people. Some are grumbling, and all are wondering if this land still made for you and me. Tell them!
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin, as we have been all week. We will be here through the weekend bringing you the events. I can't even call this a protest. These are just such wonderful, wonderful family citizens. It's just an amazing event. And I've got one of their representatives, Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin, on the line. Representative, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's great to have some
national attention to this incredible set of events, which is just, you know, Wisconsinites and workers standing together and drawing a line in the sand saying you're not going to take away workers' rights here.
Yeah, I've been saying all week that no matter what happens, whether Scott Walker gets this pushed through, steals the rights of these workers or not, the people have won, that this is a victory because it's, I think, waking people up to the realities that we face.
Absolutely. And already there are victories. We've heard from leaders in other states that say, we're not going to do this. We see what's happening in Wisconsin. We're not going to overreach like that governor did. And so already there are very positive things coming out of this mass demonstration. But, you know, it was just a couple of weeks ago that Scott Walker introduced his budget repair bill and was planning on ramming it through in less than a week. And the citizens of this state went, oh, no, you don't. This is a huge overreach. This is worker rights. Wisconsin was a state that pioneered collective bargaining for public employees. And people stood up and spoke with one voice. It is incredible what's going on here.
And it's, what's amazing, and this is what I've been telling people back home, because all the people back home keep emailing me and letting me know what they're hearing. All they're hearing is that they think there's chaos here, that there are riots and that there's all of this turmoil. I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing cookies and bagels and people feeding each other. And as the folks here chant, this is what democracy looks like. They've set up child care centers. They've set up cleaning lists. I'm just amazed by it.
Absolutely. You know, and how resourceful were folks when the teachers in the city of Madison and school districts around the state had sick ends and participated in the demonstrations. Parents bonded together and took turns. Churches and YW and YMCAs all sprung up and said, we're gonna be a part of this. And then when the teachers went back into their classrooms, the parents said, who's gonna fill the shoes of those teachers at the Capitol speaking out? The parents then came out and took their place. I mean, it's just incredible, as you say.
Yep. Let's talk about the politics of this. For me, it really caught my attention the second that the governor here said he was going to call out the National Guard, hearkening back to the 1800s, where governors used to use the militia often to break up strikes and to shoot workers. That's what grabbed me, and I'm curious because the IFARC moment that really grabbed people's attention.
Well, and you know, sadly, Wisconsin had a chapter like that also. Wisconsin was a major participant in both the civil rights struggles in the 60s, but then against the Vietnam War. And back then, the National Guard was called out, and there was violence on the campus and around the Capitol Square. So when a governor hadn't learned that lesson of history, in this very state, I think it sent shivers up people's spines that he was so unacquainted with the history of that type of move. But what's happened, and you've seen it every day, that this has been such a peaceful protest. Certainly people are loud, they're angry, but it has been completely peaceful. And in fact, last Saturday, after one of the largest rallies in Wisconsin history, almost 100,000 people showed up, the Capitol Police issued a thank you letter to the participants saying they were amazed at how peaceful the demonstration was.
In talking to some of the policemen here who, again, got to be some of the nicest policemen I've ever met, not one arrest.
Right. Last Saturday, during that 100,000-person demonstration, yes, not one arrest. And it just shows that the people simply want to be heard. And we're just asking Governor Walker, hear our voices, hear our pleas.
Yep. And, you know, much to the Tea Party's chagrin, much to the Koch brothers' chagrin, I'm sure. Were you surprised at the phone call that was released yesterday? What grabbed me initially was the fact that he said, you know, the fake Koch brothers said, well, why don't we send in some troublemakers? And the governor said, well, we'd already thought of that.
Yeah, no, I was very troubled by that phone call. And I think to me, regardless of the content, what disturbed me the most is that Democratic state legislators have been calling the governor now for days saying, we've got to work this out. We've got to figure out a way forward for our state. We have to talk in order to resolve this stalemate. So call us back. He could take a 20-minute call with a person faking to be a Kansas billionaire, but he won't take calls from his own state's legislature.
I think it's important for everybody to understand that that the Democrats want to work this out, that the solution is already on the table. The workers have already said they're willing to make massive concessions. There's no here. This is pure ideology. This is purely his blind faith belief.
You know, you're absolutely correct, and I think it's a point that can't be emphasized enough. This is this denial of worker rights is contained in what they call the budget repair bill. Well, the unions, the public sector unions, have already said very clearly, every economic concession you've asked of us in this piece of legislation, we will agree to. So this is no longer a budget balancing issue. It's not a budget issue at all. It is about basic human worker rights. And you can't emphasize that enough. He keeps going on to Fox News and other television outlets and saying the state's broke and we have to do this because of our budget problems. Well, it's not true. It's simply a lie.
Yeah, it's just sad. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. You know, we keep hearing this over and over. We've got to sacrifice somehow. And I've been saying, you know, why when we were talking about, you know, somehow redivvying up the pie so that workers got a bigger slice of it, why was that socialism? But now that we want to balance budgets, somehow sacrificing, especially working people sacrificing, somehow that's patriotic. I'm missing the boat on that.
Well, and when you combine that with the fact that this governor's first effort was to call a special session to give tax breaks to the rich and powerful corporations, creating the budget hole that he now wants to fill by having workers sacrifice even more. Let me just put some context on this. Is we've had collective bargaining for public employees longer than any other state in the country, 52 plus years, I believe.
1959.
And so what I can tell you is that every year the state balances its budget. They have been brought to the table and say, we want to be part of the solution. We want to be part of making this state work for its citizens. And so the history is of union members sacrificing at times of challenge, economic challenge, times of budgetary challenge, time and time again. There's no reason to believe that they're not going to continue to do that in the future, but you don't need to deny them their rights to accomplish the task of planning for the future.
Right. You know, in the November elections, the Republicans ran on, we're going to create jobs. But all I'm seeing on the federal level as well as the state level is this divisiveness, this political payback. We're going to go after our enemies with vengeance and destroy them. But at the end of the day, the people still, they still need leadership. They need mm-hmm. some people who are going to have vision and foresight. And I'm not seeing that here. One of the people that emailed us from Milwaukee, who listens to our program, said, I would love to come see you in Madison, but there's no public transportation. There's no train. If it were the 1950s, I could have taken a train to Madison.
Right. Well, and you probably are aware that one of the first acts this governor made was to turn away $810 million from the federal government to build a high-speed rail connecting Milwaukee and Madison. He said, don't want it, don't need it. That would have created jobs in the thousands for the construction phase and then permanent jobs thereafter for maintaining the trains and operating the trains. All of that lost to Wisconsin because of his stubbornness and lack of vision for our state's future.
Last question I've got for you, Congresswoman. As this goes on longer and longer, the thought that the governor could come down with an iron fist, I'm curious where you see this resolving itself.
Well, nobody knows exactly how this is going to play out. Our 14 courageous state senators are keeping their resolve to allow the people of Wisconsin to speak. The people of Wisconsin continue to speak. What we're hoping is that the governor will listen as the people speak and talk to labor as well as to the legislators in the state Senate, so that we can move forward and move forward together. As long as the governor is unwilling to negotiate with workers or negotiate with his legislators, his state senators, we remain at an impasse. And I think this incredible display of citizenship and participatory democracy needs to continue, just so that Scott Walker knows we're watching and we're listening and we're speaking with one voice.
And they're dancing and pounding drums and singing and eating cookies and bagels in the Capitol and having a good time doing it, but also they know why they're there.
That's exactly right.
Representative, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Keep up the fight. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
Let's play a game called Washington Budget Whackers Go Wacky. Unfortunately, though, it's not a game. Axe-wielding Republicans and Democrats alike are madly whacking at our nation's public programs in a political contest to show which of them is the scroogiest of all. For example, both are going after the very useful program that helps low-income Americans pay the ever-rising cost of heating their homes in the dead of winter. This budget cut will literally cut off the heat to some of the most vulnerable people in our society. But hey, say Congress critters, whose workplace is always kept toasty at taxpayers' expense, everyone must sacrifice. Well, not really everyone. Washington's ferocious axe wielders are sparing assorted corporate subsidies. Take the Market Access Program. Please. It hands $200 million a year to such huge processors and exporters of agricultural commodities as Sunkist and Welch's so they can advertise their products abroad. Hello, these free enterprise giants have plenty of money to do their own ads. Even wackier, this subsidy often is frittered away on nonsense. Last year, the Cotton Council used a big chunk of its $20 million handout from Uncle Sam to promote U.S. cotton sales in India. India? That country produces twice as much cotton as we do and is a major exporter of the stuff, so it has no interest in buying ours. Nonetheless, such outfits are in line for more federal advertising dollars, while poor folks are literally to be left in the cold. Why? It's the perverse power of political money at work. The outfits getting ad subsidies give more than $8 million a year in campaign donations and spend about $10 million a year on lobbyists. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help straighten out this out-of-whack system, contact the Public Interest Research Group at uspirg.org. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gas, slang, groceries, and our hate is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gas, slang, groceries, and our hate is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. They say they're bearing out some bait. I'll take some of
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin, where the revolution has begun, the front lines of the class war. I'm sitting here with Lenora Hansen. She's a project assistant in the English department of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Lenora, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, yeah, certainly. It's a pleasure.
Let me know, what's going on here? Why are you here in Madison? Why are you here at the Capitol today?
Well, I think I'm here for a number of reasons. So I am originally from Birmingham, Alabama. I have been at the UW now for two semesters, so this is my first year in the PhD program. And so I think that I come from a state. Obviously, most southern states are right-to-work states, so we don't have the right to collectively bargain. And I think that I've realized, being in Madison just the short time that I've been here, how important it is on a political level to actually have some kind of power, to have an empowerment for your voice, have an empowerment for negotiation, and it's been just an incredible experience being here and realizing that people do have that right here, and to have that threatened is incredibly terrifying, and it's amazing to see the turnout in response to that.
Yeah, I'm shocked by the number of people. I guess not shocked, but in this time, especially the folks I've met, mostly younger people who, it's been my experience, know very little about labor unions because you really haven't been exposed to it.
Yeah, no, I think that has amazed all of us, especially as grad students, to see undergrads pouring out in huge numbers. And I think part of it here is the sense that, yes, some of them don't know exactly what labor history is like, but they do understand what community is, I think, and they do understand what it means to be able to speak together in a large group and have your voice heard in a large group. And it seems to be one of the more powerful issues here.
You know, one of the things that I've been saying is this is going to be an opportunity, I think, for the younger generation to really go back and learn some of the history. When Scott Walker said he was going to call out the National Guard, for instance, to me that harkened back to the 1880s, where we were dropping bombs on workers.
Yeah, oh, completely. I was here I've slept here almost every night, and I was here last night at about 3 o'clock in the morning and just looking around the rotunda with the signs that are posted up and people just bedded down in the Capitol building, and all I could think was, yeah, this is the 60s, this is the 19th century in France. You know, like, it just calls up all of these experiences where people take over a space that is theirs and make it their own. And, yeah, it's incredibly, it does. It brings back these amazing historical moments, but instead they're right in your face now.
Absolutely. You know, and this is an amazing time, which is why we are here, because I think more people need to know. And what's sad is I don't see national media here at all.
Yeah, we've had some turnout. I mean, unfortunately, Fox News has been here.
But even that's okay. I mean, yeah. You know, it's telling the story. I looked at the newspaper this morning, the USA Today. There's not a mention of this on the front page. You know what is on the front page? Luxury is back.
Okay.
The wealth class is doing very well. Luxury is back, yet we're talking about taking collective bargaining rights away from workers and then making them pay even more beyond the concessions they've already given.
No, I think that's always one of the concerns with these instances. I mean, I remember this specifically being in the South and with the Katrina event, that, you know, something comes on the radar. And we were amazed at first with the outpouring of media attention. So we did have CNN covering us, I mean, The Guardian, you know, like just all these massive media outlets. But I thought about that yesterday as well when I didn't see a headline about Madison where, you know, it's just the sense that things fall off the radar, but instead, I mean, right now it's a movement, like it can't fall off the radar.
I mean, do you think I'm saying it's not even on the radar, and they don't want it on the radar because they don't want the rest of the country to think about this issue. You know, they're very happy dividing the working class. They're very happy having the Tea Party doing their bidding. And what I find interesting is that you walk around and you talk to the young folks here. This is what the Tea Party movement should have been.
Yeah, precisely. Well, I think this is one of the interesting times or moments, perhaps, when we're seeing, you know, blog spots and, you know, like all these different kinds of media that, granted, they're not national media outlets, but, you know, it's a grassroots kind of media effort. And granted, of course, it's not the same acknowledgement as, I mean, even though the New York Times has covered it, for an amazing to see individuals take this responsibility of what the media should be doing on to themselves. And I think that's been an encouraging side to it, at least.
Well, I mean, surprisingly, you know, and looking at the media coverage that has happened, the New York Times, for instance, you know, said this is about money. And they're really trying to diminish by saying this is about dollars and cents, when the reality is it's about your rights.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I think we've had these conversations a number of times that this has to be a fundamental battle over rights and about voice. And yeah, I mean, definitely there's going to be a media bias, and I think unfortunately we have to expect that.
Now, as I understand, here at the Capitol, the Capitol is open as long as people are giving testimony. And they've been giving testimony for a couple of days now.
Yeah, we've been giving testimony. I registered to speak Tuesday night when this started happening. Didn't actually testify until Wednesday morning at about 6 o'clock in the morning. But we've had people testifying since Tuesday at roughly 12 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's historic.
And what has been your testimony? What do you want the people to know? What do you want your elected officials to know?
Well, I think that I did speak particularly to the point that I'm from the South, and we all talk about this extreme apathy that people have towards political action, political engagement, and I think that one of the reasons that we see that is because you remove the systems or the entities, organizations by which people can actually do something. So, you know, I worked in the South in the restaurant industry for a very long time. We don't have a way to argue for health benefits or health care. So you work extra jobs and you talk about how terrible it is you can't get health insurance, but there's no way to actually achieve getting good health coverage. Here, that's not the case. Like, there's an actual means by which you can negotiate and argue for those benefits. And so I think that this is largely this is an issue of, if you want people to participate in democracy, which is we should be a participatory democracy, then we have to have structures to protect that, and the union is one of those.
Talk to me a little bit about being from Alabama and it being a right-to-work state already. For the people who don't know why this is an important issue, because I know back in Pennsylvania, a lot of people that I've talked to, them, oh, what's it matter? I'm not in a union. It doesn't affect me. But I've always said, you know, the fact is the union worker who's making a decent wage brings yours up, brings your ability to get a little bit more of the pie, if you will. But speak a little bit to that, if you would, you know, from your experience. What exactly would you – what's Wisconsin going to lose? What will Ohio lose? What will Pennsylvania lose?
I would say that largely it is that issue of coming up with issues and needs that workers have, so benefits, health care, grievance procedures. We all know in the workplace that these are problems and these are needs that need to be met, but where I'm from in Alabama, it's not possible to negotiate with anyone. So your best means of attaining something like health care is to go straight to your employer. And everyone that I know who has done that gets turned away with the response of, we don't have the money for it, not now, we'll do it later. And I'm specifically speaking about service industry workers, but I mean, I think this is the case statewide, that you can only petition your employer, and you can't do it. You have no power behind what you say. So they're just individual requests that have no legitimacy behind them. So I think it's very disempowering. It's very disheartening to work in a system like that, where you have needs and people are suffering, but there's no means by which you can actually petition for assistance or aid. So I think it's basically the difference is between going from having absolutely no means to accomplish the goals to ameliorate people's hurting and pain and suffering and needs to actually having a means to do that.
Are you surprised by the outpouring you've seen? Are you surprised by the – because to me, I'm looking at this, and this is an amazing moment in history. This is amazing in the fact that we're seeing people who – most of the people out here are not benefiting from a union right now. They're not benefiting from collective bargaining right now. But yet here they are sacrificing and putting themselves out.
Yeah, I think that they aren't benefiting from the union, but what they're benefiting from is this amazing energy and this sense that we can make a difference, that we actually have there's a possibility to change something here, and that's what is so exciting for people. I'm definitely surprised. I would never have expected 2 weeks ago, if someone had told me this was going to be going on in Madison, and I certainly never thought moving to Wisconsin was going to make my life this much more exciting, I can tell you that. But, no, I've been amazingly – at the same time that I'm amazed, I'm just happy to see, like, I think that we all know that people have the capacity to do this, that we all have this power, but to see it come together like this is definitely astounding.
Is this the beginning of a new progressive movement, as some of the folks I've talked to?
I think we all hope so. I think the foundation for it is here, certainly.
I sure hope so, because I'm I know a lot of folks who were disheartened by the Tea Party, and because I was right there with them. I was angry. I was ticked off that Wall Street had stolen our 401ks. I was mad that, you know, big business moved the jobs overseas. But this twist that somehow it's all the government's fault.
That's amazing.
So on Saturday, they bust a couple of Tea Party people, and you know, I guess 200 or 300.
I think the top count was 1,000, but that might it's anywhere in the neighborhood of under that, but no more than.
And I really believe that they were looking for trouble.
Well, I mean, I wasn't outside very much that day. I think that there's always a level of antagonism. I know we were all concerned about something breaking out, and I know that we're all incredibly proud and happy about the fact that nothing happened, that we maintained the peace.
This is the nicest protest I've ever been to.
No, it is.
And the cleanest.
Amazing. Yeah, it's amazing. No, we're running trash crews. I mean, like, we are here to prove to them that we have a stake here, that we care about what goes on with our government, we care about our jobs, and, they can't take that away from us.
Lenora Hansen, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, and keep up the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here live in Madison, Wisconsin, home of the front lines of the class war, folks. This is what's coming. This is sweeping across the country. People have converged on Madison, Wisconsin to have their voice heard. That's why we're here. We've got to see what's going to happen soon. Dr. Toni Lewis, she has come from New York to come out here and have her voice heard. Dr. Lewis, I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here.
What brings you to Madison, Wisconsin?
Why would you not be in Madison, Wisconsin today? If you are thinking about justice, if you're thinking about the rights and the lives of working families, this is where you need to be in the United States. You have to be here. And I'm really proud to be. I'm a family doctor, but I'm also chair of SEIU's healthcare division with 1 million healthcare workers around the country, and they're all telling me we all need to be in Wisconsin because an injury to one of us is an injury to all of us. So,
yeah, that's
I'm
something
here.
That we don't hear very often.
How about it?
For the last 30 years, pretty much my entire conscious life, we've been hearing hooray for me and the heck everybody with everybody else. You know, the one who dies with the most toys wins.
Right.
You know, all of this individualistic, you know, Horatio Alger, I'm on an island kind of mentality.
Right.
What we're seeing here today, what we've been seeing here in Madison, completely opposite of that measure of thinking.
Absolutely. You know, I was just outside rallying with nurses, with doctors, with steel workers, with folks from, you know, all over the country, people coming in from California and Seattle and New York and everyone over the next couple of weeks and just on and on and on because it's growing. This is not dying down. This is not getting smaller. And it is about, oh, my gosh, who's next? Well, that's me or my children or my teacher. So we all feel it.
You know, the reason we came, to be honest, is, you know, we're looking down the barrel of the same gun that the
Indeed.
Folks here in Wisconsin are looking down.
Absolutely.
We have a Republican control that's unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a governor who, you know, has taken this bizarre anti-tax pledge. They want to sell off all the state assets. They want to do all this insane stuff.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, we the people have to rise up, and I'm looking to this as the model.
Yes.
To show you this is what democracy looks like. This is how average, everyday working people influence their government.
That's right. And, you know, it's been awesome to see generations out here. You know, I've seen folks that are 4, 5, and 6, and I've seen retirees and folks with canes and walkers, and everyone's out with their voice in all different colors, shapes, and sizes, you name it. It's about standing up and having a voice, and that's what we're fighting for today, the fact that, you know, folks want to take away the voice of working people. So, yeah, it's time.
But, you know, when you look at the mainstream media, we're not hearing that.
Mm-hmm.
We're hearing it's just those greedy union workers.
Yes.
They just want to keep their pay. Those greedy teachers, they just want their pensions. All of this divide, slice and dice the working class up. I always go back to Jay Gould,
mm-hmm.
Who was a railroad magnate in the 1800s,
mm-hmm.
Who said, I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing is not so much people in the streets with clubs and sticks anymore as we're seeing the media, you know, slicing and dicing us image-wise.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you see that a lot in people, even just in the rally this week. You know, they'll say that, you know, there were as many folks from the Tea Party as there were from the working class, but that's not true. Like, there have been voices all over the country that have been raising up for this, and it's just about people speaking their truth and us talking about it. Yeah.
You bring up the Tea Party,
and
interestingly enough, you know, when that whole thing kind of started, when a couple of angry people said, you know what, I'm ticked off.
Mm-hmm.
I was with them. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'm angry too.
Sure.
Let's talk about the things that we're angry about, the fact that our 401ks are slashed in half, the fact that we're losing health care, the fact that, you know, educationally we're falling behind the rest of the world. Yes, I'm there.
Yes.
Then they made this bizarre turn
to
where, well, the government's the problem and we need more business solutions.
Right.
Well, I'm looking at what's going on here in Wisconsin. This, what Scott Walker is doing, is a business solution.
Absolutely.
This is destroy workers' rights, steal from the workforce, and give money to the investor class, which I guess the first couple of days in office, he handed out a big pot of money to people who don't need it.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And it's on balancing the budget on the backs of working class folks. I mean, and you see it across the country, like you said, you know, we're looking at things in Pennsylvania. You can name any state that's got a budget situation and how they're trying to solve it on the backs of working class by letting corporations get away with craziness. You know, and it's happening around the globe, you know, in the UK.
Absolutely.
I was talking with some partners over there. There's an assault on public workers there. And, you know, it's we're talking about health care. We're talking about education. We're talking about our teachers, our libraries, our safety. And it's just, it's a little bit crazy that they want to just kind of demonize our folks that are working so hard to keep our cities and our countries running.
Well, what it is they've done a nice job of dividing us.
Sure.
So you look at yourself and you say, well, you know, I work hard and I do all this and I deserve what I get. But it's those people.
Yes.
that they don't deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I never, you know, and I've talked to several people. To me, that is a foreign concept that I would see you doing well, and maybe I'm not doing so well that I want to see you torn down.
And how does that help? How does that help anyone?
It doesn't help anyone.
You know, it really, and it is, and I agree with you. It's funny, and it's tragic, but maybe it's a good thing for our movement that it's taken something this serious to kind of get us all to say and to understand that an insult to all of us is we all have to stand up and fight for each other. You know, I'm proud in SEIU we have doctors and nurses and healthcare workers and janitors and security guards and blah, blah. You know, I could go on and on and on, but we're all
those
just trying to work to make ourselves, make our lives better. And that's just, we all have to stand up together because, you know, you see what happens when we're divided.
You know, what's interesting, you've put a face to the people now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think, you know, especially in our state, that they try not to do.
Yeah.
It's those state workers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the firemen. It's not the police.
Right.
It's not the social workers. It's not those people that could be living in the house next to us.
Yes.
That could be our friends and family and neighbors. It's not those people.
Right.
It's that institution.
Yes.
And what's amazing to me, again, the right has done a masterful job of saying, you know, workers are somehow divorced from their union. It's not the workers we're upset with. They say it's those union bosses.
Can you imagine? Yeah, that's my
favorite. It's all in the messaging.
Yeah. It is totally in the messaging, and it's just, it's unfortunate to me how I was watching some of the commercials, you know, on TV this morning, how like they make it sound like the union is not hundreds of thousands of mothers and fathers and daughters and sons. It's not people working. You know, some home care workers in this state are getting such low wages, and they're taking care of folks' mothers and grandmothers. And it's, they want to say the union, the big U, like insert, you know what I mean? Like try to title it like it's some big bad something else when it's your neighbor. It's you. So it is right to put that face on it and to speak up for people that are just people, human beings.
They're any one of us. And, you know, which is why we've come here.
Yes.
I think it's important that we have these conversations. Look, if you want to steal from people, we should at least know why you're stealing.
Right.
And in this case, they're stealing not to feed their families, because I don't have a problem with people who are stealing to feed their families.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a problem with people who are stealing to enrich people who are never going to miss a meal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What does that say about us as a society?
Right, indeed. And, you know, the workers of Wisconsin have said, look, we care about our community. We care about our state. We're willing to give back. We are willing to work hard. We're willing to take a pay cut. We're willing to do all these things. And so it's not like these. Does that sound like a greedy worker to you?
No, it isn't. But that's not the message that's getting out, Dr. Lewis.
That's not the message getting out.
Not at all.
Yeah.
The message that's getting out is, well, they just want to protect what they've got. And, of course, we all want to protect what we've got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was looking at the front page of the USA Today. Mm-hmm. This morning, and right headline across the top of it, for the wealthy, luxury is back. Not one mention.
Can you imagine?
The largest uprising in this country. Not one message on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
But the title that, hey, for the wealthy, luxury's back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're talking about cutting a teacher's pay by 18% to 40%.
Because how does that help anyone to cut the teacher's pay, to reduce classroom sizes? This is our children. This is the future of our society. Even if you're a businessman and you're talking about the workers that are coming into your system, does it really help to kind of take away the power from the parents and from the kids? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. And when you talk about USA Today, not to single out any piece of media, but this is why it's so important that your voice is on the radio and that our voices are all being heard to tell all different sides of the story, because how is luxury back? I mean, how does that help anyone that's worried about getting a job? Unemployment's still high. You know, it's just,
Help the people that Scott Walker go to for money.
It does.
It does help the people.
It does help
and,
them.
You know,
because
I hear this all the time. I hear people say, well, I want my politicians to stand up for the people.
Mm-hmm.
I always go, well, which people are you talking about?
Right.
Are you talking about the top 2% who during the month of December there received a huge windfall, a massive ripoff?
Right.
In exchange for giving small benefits to people who are unemployed? Are those the people you're talking about?
Right.
The people I want to talk about are the thousands of people who are marching in this in this event.
The students, the teachers' assistants, and all. You know, my mom got her first union job right out of college as a teacher in Wisconsin in 67. And she said when you first came here and you got a job and it was a union job because that's how you knew that when you worked you could make life for your family better. It wasn't for luxury. It wasn't to take away from the state. It wasn't to beat down other people or take away from the steel workers or any other workers. It was to make life better for your family and for your community. And that's what we're trying to make sure we bring back and that we tell the world we're doing as unions, as working folks. And Wisconsin, like you said, ground zero. We're going to do it.
These kids, I see this as an amazing opportunity.
Off the hook, yeah.
I see this as an amazing opportunity for these kids.
Yeah.
To see that, because, and I've told this story a number of times. I walked into a local high school with my Teamster jacket on with this
yep.
right here.
Mm-hmm.
Kid goes to me and goes, oh, where I see you work with horses. Where at?
Mm-hmm. Go figure.
Complete disconnect.
There's a whole section of our history, our labor history, that we just need to... This is the moment,
this
though.
Is it, I think.
This is it. This is really exciting.
And,
yeah.
and I pray that we don't lose this.
No, we can't. We can't.
So where do we go from here? Where do you go from here?
So it's as you mentioned earlier, you're dealing with it in Pennsylvania. We expect to see things like this all over the country. We've seen it happening all over the world. And, President Mary Kay Henry was just talking to the folks in the rotunda and outside about how we need to just keep going, one day stronger, 1 week stronger, 1 month stronger. This cannot stop because it feels good to us today. This is a movement. This is a change we need to make. So everyone needs to pitch in, speak up. Talk about what's wrong and get in there to make solutions for what's right. And we'll get it done. We'll make history. We are making history.
Yeah, absolutely. Right there with you, Dr. Lewis. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And keep up the fight.
Thank you. You too.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Together. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John. Big John. Big John, Big Bad John.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin. Yes, front line of the class war. We're going to be here for a good portion of the week bringing you the events, what's going on here, because I think this is vitally important that we realize what's going on here in Madison is what has to happen across this country in every state capital in every state that I think is still a free state that gives you the right to collectively bargain, the right to free association, and the right to join a union of your choice. I'm sitting here with Aaron Josert. He's a teacher here in Madison. Aaron, thanks for taking time for me.
And thanks for having me.
What brings you out to this? Brings you out to this event?
Well, since Friday when Republican Governor Walker announced his budget fix proposal in such a way that we had no inkling of what was going on, as the information came out about what he was saying, about how he was going to squash collective bargaining rights, how he was going to decertify every union every year so it had to be recertified by a secret ballot, how they were not going to collect union dues, all of these things came out on a Friday, and he just kind of walked away. Left the Capitol and left us to pick up the pieces, and that's what we're doing. We're trying to pick up the pieces from this bill, and since since Tuesday, actually, I'm proud to say that my school, our students walked out en masse, 800 strong.
Wow.
They walked out. They walked right down to the Capitol. And since then, the dominoes have been falling into place. Then the teachers went on a sick day, made some political action, which is the correct term for it. And it kept going and got bigger and bigger. And from a couple of thousand on Tuesday, 80,000 we were strong on Saturday.
Which is amazing. You know, and you pointed it right out there. This is the student-led.
Oh, it was.
You guys followed them.
You know, and I see my students here. They have been out, and they say, we're here with you, Mr. J. You know, we support you. And I just have to let them know that it is. All it takes is 8-9 people. They said, we have an idea. They put it on Facebook, and then it's 800, and then it's 20,000, and then it's 40,000, and then it's 80,000, and then the process goes national. It just takes a couple of strong voices to do what's right, and I'm so, so proud of my kids to know that they were the ones that started it all.
Yeah, I look at this, and you're right. It starts somewhere, and this has chosen Madison, Wisconsin, to be the place that I think the rest of the country is going to have to look to see activism, to see how you stand up against a repressive government. I mean, and this is kind of where I find it interesting. On Saturday, they had a couple of Tea Party people come in, 100 or two, whatever the number actually was. You would think that they would be on your side. This is tyrannical government.
Indeed, this is the type of government that they rail against in so many different forms. I mean, libertarians say the government has to stay out of our business. And Scott Walker put this bill in, and he says, oh, we need to squash collective bargaining so that the municipalities have the control to do what they need for the budget. But in his budget that's going to be coming out March 1st, he is putting a cap on the shared revenue for the state, which means that different poor communities will be getting less money from the state to deal with education. And in addition, he is proposing legislation that will disallow or prohibit levies that municipalities can have on their, when it comes voting day, that he's saying that you as a municipality cannot ask the people for more money through your property taxes, even if they're willing. Even if there's a huge percentage of people that want to support their schools, for example, with a levy, he is going to prohibit that process from taking place. So to say that you need this to keep the municipalities functioning and then to limit them, to put chains on how they would make up this difference, is hypocrisy of the highest degree. And I find that to be it puts everyone in a rage to say that, oh, yes, it's got to be this freedom so we can make these choices, but then making sure that he puts the boot on the neck of all the state workers and all the education workers and making sure that that's not going to come off and making sure nobody can help them out.
Again, you know, and we're going to see that, I do believe, in Pennsylvania, as we have a governor who took the Club for Growth anti-tax pledge, so there will be no raised revenue. And sadly, from what it sounds like you're saying, is your guy here wants to take away the ability for school districts, even if they want to, when the burden falls to them, to raise revenue. Kind of an amazing position.
That's right. And Madison has a proud tradition of making sure that we take care of our schools. When we've been lacking, we've made our cuts. This last year, we tried to cut $30 million. We got up to around $28, $29 million of cuts, and that was very hard. We're talking about class sizes now that are 30, 35. My colleague had a class that started with 40 kids. When you're trying to teach Spanish to 40 kids, it doesn't work out so well. But Madison has always been there with levies. Our levies go through to help our schools out in times of need. And now what this is saying is we will not be able to have that process. That is what is going to be proposed. And what's scarier still is Madison is, we're doing okay. But those communities that require, that subsist on those shared revenues, what are they going to do? They're not going to have any money, nor are they going to have the tools to make sure that people are getting the education they need, the services they need, any of those things. And this is what Scott Walker put forth on a Friday, left town, and said, we're going to try to get this through on Tuesday.
Probably was hoping nobody would notice. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Aaron Josert. He's a teacher in the Madison School District. You know, I look at the USA Today, right on the front page of today's paper. For the wealthy, luxury is back. It's the headline across One of the big national newspapers, luxury is back for the very wealthy, yet they're talking about, as I understand it, help me if I'm wrong, somewhere between 18 and 40% pay cuts for teachers and public sector workers. If luxury is back for the wealth class, and I'm a firm believer in shared sacrifice, Aaron. I think all of us, if times are as bad as they're telling us, we should all be sacrificing. I don't see how asking you for an 18 to 40% pay cut, in addition to all the things that you've taken over the last year, two, 3 years, I don't think we should be asking that from you at a time when evidently the wealth class, you know, luxury's back.
Well, it's also how the debate is framed. Luxury is back, they say, but Fox News said that Madison teachers make $100,000. So they're framing it to have the working class, and that is, by the way, totally false. I don't know what the average is, but I can tell you that if you work for 25 years with a PhD, you are not going to get to $100,000. You're not going to get anywhere close to that. I support my three children on a teacher's salary, and we are having a tough time as it is. I mean, there's every month where it's paycheck to paycheck, and frankly, the money that we have lost by coming out here is going to hurt, but it's what we need to do. But to say that luxury is back when people are spending, and then to give it to the workers and say, you are the ones that need to bear the burden of this excess, it's just... it's just onerous to everyone that is trying to support a family, is trying to make a living, is trying to be a positive community. And frankly, if there's no collective bargaining, we don't have a contract, how do I know when that 18% becomes 25%? How am I going to spend? How am I going to put things back into the community when I have to just struggle to even make the mortgage, which I'm doing already?
Let me ask you, you have chosen to become a teacher. That was your chosen profession. As you look back, and they say hindsight's 20/20, is this something, given the environment, that you would choose again?
You know, that's a tough question because
I understand it because your love of what you actually
do.
No, you
do what you love,
and then but the fact that you've got kids to feed, you've got people to take care of.
At a certain point, it is the burden that we all share. But when do you say enough is enough? When it comes down to it, if I can't make ends meet as a teacher, if I already pick up work in the summer to try to supplement that income, if I can't do that, I'm going to get into the private sector in any way I can. And Governor Walker has said it's about saving jobs. It's about the people who are unemployed. But let me ask you this. If I'm a highly educated professional that's out there searching out for the other jobs that are now going to be not available for those other employed people who have been out on the lines now for 10, 11, 12 months, who's going to get that job? When teachers are laid off, when they need to go somewhere else because they can't make ends meet, that just means there are less jobs for everyone else. It is not about jobs. It is about putting an end to collective bargaining.
It's about control, pure and simple. It's about a dictatorial figure saying you're going to do what I say when I say, just like it is in the business community. And look, they ran on this. They ran on it. They're going to run government like business, and this is part of how government deals with their employee relations.
Yes, it's an absolute shame. One of the silver linings, I have to say, and I wish your listeners could feel the energy out there in this rotunda building where thousands and thousands of people are coming. Hundreds of people are sleeping overnight. They haven't left the building for days on end. And to have all of these different unions, even teachers and firefighters, whose unions aren't affected by this, they were cleared by
the firefighters, right?
Yeah,
but they understand. They're
they're next.
Too.
Yeah,
they're next in line.
They're out there strong, and it's just so wonderful to see in a way. Hopefully it's irony in 2020, hindsight, but Scott Walker's trying to kill the unions, but right now he's making them stronger.
The last question I've got for you, you're a young guy, this goes through, there's a possibility of maybe you leaving the area to look for teaching. I know where we're at, in Pennsylvania there's this belief that all the young people flee the state, because Pennsylvania, after all, has the second oldest population in the country. Not good for education down the road when your younger teachers are leaving because they can't put food on the table.
Well, and I tell you, it's I love Wisconsin. I was born in Wisconsin. I've been here not all my life, but it's the place that I will always want to come back to. But when it comes down to it, if I can support my family, if I need to break those ties so that I can give my children a better education somewhere else, or if I can give them a better standard of living and have us, you know, able to enjoy life every once in a while, it's going to have to be done, and it would break my heart. But if this goes through, these are choices that all of us are going to have to make.
And painful choices they are. Aaron Jessert, I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming here. Thanks for the work you're doing. I appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
As the Wisconsin Assembly wrapped up debate and drew closer to a vote on the Republican bill gutting collective bargaining for public workers, pro-working family protesters kept their vigil at the Capitol, and protests were also held in 17 Wisconsin cities outside of Madison. Republicans succeeded in getting the Assembly to vote and pass the collective bargaining bill early Friday morning. But to become law, Wisconsin's Senate must also pass it, and the 14 Wisconsin Democratic senators remain in Illinois, effectively blocking GOP efforts to wipe out public worker collective bargaining. Wisconsin State Patrol officers, meanwhile, were ordered to the homes of some Wisconsin state senators to look for them Thursday, but came up empty. Firefighters and police unions continued to stand shoulder to shoulder with other Wisconsin public workers and their allies in this fight. Police presence has been beefed up at the state capitol in Madison, and entrance and exit from the Capitol building is more tightly controlled than when this remarkable protest began 11 days ago. As the Reverend Jesse Jackson marched arm in arm with Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin and firefighters through Wisconsin's state capitol this week in defense of collective bargaining, he told reporters it reminded him of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s final efforts to help public sanitation workers in Memphis in 1968.
Just to join the two workers in a nonviolent, disciplinary fighting back to something as basic as economic justice.
While Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's budget repair bill specifically targets public sector workers, the rallies during the last 11 days have witnessed a strong showing of solidarity from private sector workers. Jesse Russell reports.
Ann Schwartz is an electrician and member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. She explained why it's so important for her to join the rallies.
It does affect everyone, and I live here in Madison. My nieces and nephews attend Madison Public Schools. If I get sick, I go to a hospital here. The nurses go to the UW, the nurses home here.
Iron worker Pete Stern also works in the private sector.
We weren't targeted in this legislation specifically. It's an attack on unions, and it's targeting public sector brothers and sisters. And an injury to one is an injury to all. And we're standing in solidarity. We've been here all week since this started with our members, and we're showing our support. We're standing with them because it is like dominoes.
In the squares of the city, in the shadow of the steeple.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
I see my people. Some are grumbling, and all are wondering if this land's still made for you and me. Tell them!
Don't have a phone? Email Rick. At Rick@therickSmithShow.com. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
There's a thundercloud exploding, and I'm free at last. Like Joe Hill and Cesar Chavez, who fought in their own time. Like our brothers and our sisters, up and down that picket line. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin, home of the, well, the front lines of the class war. And a nice friendly class war at that. This is the friendliest and the most peaceful riot I've ever been to. What's important here is that we've seen thousands and thousands of young people coming out and fighting for something that they see is going to benefit them in the future. And this is an opportunity that I think is so important, especially for the people in labor. That's why I've asked Liz Schuler, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, to come talk to us a little bit. Liz, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on the show.
You know, I look at what's going on here, and I see this as an amazing opportunity for folks like you to reach out to a generation that I think doesn't have the best information, doesn't have the best grasp of labor history. I see this as a great opportunity.
Absolutely, Rick, and you know it. Young people are basically leading the charge when it comes to making our voices heard, not only in Wisconsin, but you saw, you know, what's been happening, obviously, in North Africa, in Egypt, and all throughout our country, in Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, New England. So young people are really the ones who are willing to get out there and take the risks. And so it's very heartening to see that they recognize that the attacks on the middle class and on working families are literally going to be affecting them, certainly, as they come along in the workforce.
You know, the reason we came here from central Pennsylvania is I do believe that what Scott Walker wanted to do here in Wisconsin, a number of governors across the state are want to do in their states. They're just looking to Walker to lead the way on this. Well, the reason I'm here is I want people in our listening area to see what's going on here, to hear what's going on here, and to know when these kind of assaults on workers' rights come to our area in Pennsylvania, just how to react.
No, you're absolutely right. This is almost as if it was a playbook, and what happens in Wisconsin is going to signal to the rest of these states where there's been a change in leadership that this is what we're going to be headed for next. We've seen, you know, the right wing basically deciding that this is their moment, and you are familiar with what's happening in Ohio with Governor Kasich. Certainly in Indiana, which has changed in the last 24 to 48 hours, the governor made his announcement that he's not going to pursue legislation. But I think, you know, that it is a testament to the fact that they feel that the only thing standing in their way to total power is the unions. And so how best to dismantle the voice that speaks out against corporate greed and speaks out to protect family wages and benefits, which would be to, you know, eliminate unions. So I think, you know, we're seeing more and more of the same old politics. And so you're right. Wisconsin is really the first step in what we hope won't be a watershed moment for them.
You know, one of the things that Scott Walker said in the now infamous phony phone call is that he views this as the Patco moment. He believed that, you know, by firing the air traffic controllers, Reagan showed those commie Russians what he was made of, because look what he would do to his own people. Imagine what he would do to the Russians if he's willing to do that to his own people. And, you know, I'm trying to get this mindset that Walker must have been in when he said that, somehow trying to, you know, trying to raise the spirit of Ronald Reagan and in his twisted mind, thinks that he's going to be able to really put his workers down. It makes almost no sense to me.
No, you're absolutely right. It's absolute crazy behavior. And we've known all along that this isn't about the budget. It's not about finances. It's really more about undermining workers' freedom to join unions and really stand up for a middle-class life. And so that is a consistent theme to what was happening back with Reagan and the air traffic controllers. But we really see this as an extreme overreach. We think that, you know, we're seeing, as you mentioned, similar pushes in places all over the country, and it's a political payback. It's a political payback to corporate CEOs. We know Cook Brothers and others who spent billions of dollars to elect politicians.
You know, last Saturday, the Koch brothers and their front groups, American for Prosperity and Freedom Works and all those, they bust in a couple of hundred outsiders, well-trained tea twizzlers, well-trained in how to get people riled up and how to document it. And not one incident, not one. And, you know, having been here now for a week, these folks, these local people, because the 99% of them are local folks, these are some of the nicest, most friendly people I've ever met. And I, you know, you look at this and you go, yeah, I can just see one of these tea twizzlers getting in one of their face and trying to rile them up and walking away with a cookie and a smile on their face. Because this is the
well, democracy is a beautiful thing. You're absolutely right because, you know, we're all about having a civil discussion and really coming up with creative solutions. And unfortunately, the governor hasn't given us the opportunity to really sit down with him and talk through what are the challenges. We know there does need to be shared sacrifice. We've acknowledged that. But let's get down to what really matters, and certainly eliminating collective bargaining rights and silencing the voices of working families isn't the solution.
Well, let me ask you this, Liz, because you've brought the shared sacrifice thing up, which, again, I'm going to say there isn't shared sacrifice. The wealthy in this country have walked away from the shared part of that or the sacrifice
right.
part. Well, let me ask you, why is it that when, you know, for the last year we've been talking about how do we more equitably divide the wealth in this country so that the working people who create that wealth get a better part of it? That somehow talking about that is socialism. But now that, you know, sharing the pain by having to take lower pensions and lower wages, somehow that's patriotic. I'm missing that.
I am too. Thank you very much, because somehow they've successfully changed the conversation. They've changed the debate. They've made it seem like a crime in this country to actually have a pension, to actually have retirement security. Why is it that we're talking about lowering benefits? Why shouldn't we be talking about providing retirement security for everyone? They're scapegoating state employees, thinking, oh, well, they've, you know, received richer benefits than the average private sector. Well, we know that's not true. But in terms of shared sacrifice, I'm glad you brought that up, because why is it that we're only focusing on workers' sacrifices here? We all know that Wall Street was the cause of the economic meltdown. Somehow we've had amnesia in the public debate about the effects of Wall Street. And certainly if we're talking shared sacrifice, we need to talk about how Wall Street and those in that upper income bracket, the highest 1%, are going to share in some of that pain.
You know, the other day I looked at the USA Today, because we're staying in a hotel and they give you the useless today, or the USA Today. They give you that free, and that's about what it's worth. But right there on the front page, it said for the wealthy, luxury is back. Well, here's what I'm saying. If luxury is back for the wealthy folks, why are we asking teachers and policemen and firemen and public service workers, why are we asking them to take pay cuts? Why are we furloughing them for 12 days a year here in Wisconsin? I got a lot of problems with if luxury's back for them, why are we sticking it to the working people?
Right, and that headline is, it just makes you sick, because you think about the jobs crisis that we've been in for the last couple of years, and people are still suffering, they're still unemployed, and we've been doing everything we can to shine a light on how do we get the economic engine moving again, how do we create jobs and invest in rebuilding our roads and our bridges and our schools and, you know, manufacturing policies to really start building things in America again and stop sending our jobs overseas. For whatever reason, people have, again, lost sight of what is the real priority here. It's not to attack people, it's to create jobs. And it's really not time to divide, it's time to bring people together for action.
You know, it's interesting you brought that up, the create jobs thing. Because all up until the election in November, all we kept hearing the Republicans talk about, Liz Shuler, is we're going to create jobs. We're going to help the job creators. Well, all I've seen since they've taken power is divisiveness and destruction. And bills like this where Walker wants to destroy jobs. Because if he gets what he wants, the paper industry in this country, the forest industry in this state will lose its certification and could cost thousands of jobs here in Wisconsin.
Well, and I believe he made a pledge when he first took office that he was going to create 250,000 jobs over 4 years or something. He is doing the exact opposite, first of all, by pushing through $140 million in new spending for special interest groups in January. That's what's caused the so-called economic crisis that he's talking about in the state budget. So once again, instead of creating jobs, he's taking attention off what he needs to and instead focusing on political paybacks.
That's it in a nutshell. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Liz Shuler, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. You know, one of the chants that's prevalent here is, this is what democracy looks like. And you look around at all the families walking around through the Capitol, all of the families who are bringing their children to spend the night and be part of this historic moment. The amazing thing here is, I agree, this what's going on here is what democracy should look like and what Scott Walker should be taking a good look at, because what they've done here is they've set up child care centers so that people, when they bring their kids, they can have somewhere for child care when they go off to do things. They've got people picking up trash. They've got people bringing in food. They have figured it out in a very, very orderly fashion. Mm-hmm. And this is what democracy looks like.
And it's what solidarity looks like, because, as you know, the public sector is sort of in the sight lines now, but a lot of private sector workers have said, whoa, this isn't just going to affect me or affect public sector. It's going to affect me next. So we have, even though firefighters and police are exempt from the proposal, we have, those folks coming out in solidarity. We have community members coming together with nurses and EMTs, and we have teachers joining arms with their students. It's really been inspiring. It's been heartening to see the community come together, like you said, in democracy and solidarity with their Packers sleeping bags and, you know, whatever else kind of support that they can lend to really bring this into the spotlight. And I might add that we have seen solidarity rallies and actions all over this country. We had a rally in D.C. yesterday outside the Wisconsin governor's D.C. office. There's going to be a big event in New Jersey tomorrow. There's buses coming in, you know, from Los Angeles and from Massachusetts and Seattle. I know that some states who can't send buses have done petitions. So Wisconsin's not an isolated event. And we're standing together to ensure that it doesn't happen in any other place.
And back home in Harrisburg, there is the rally to save the American dream at noon by our friends over at Keystone Progress. And the crazy right-wingers are going to have their counter-protest, so that will be interesting to see. Liz Shuler, last bit of question, got about a minute left. No matter what happens here, I think this is a major win for working people. I think going forward, this is going to be that moment in history, at least I'm hoping and praying it is, that starts to bring us all back together.
I think you're right, Rick. I think that you can see not only people coming out in person, the newspapers and all the online media really have collective bargaining in the headlines. And who would have thought that would be the case even a month ago?
Yep.
So I think we want to make sure that Wisconsin is that spark that actually translates into a long-term sustained effort to really protect the middle class. And as you know, it's been in decay and decline and very much being threatened. And so we want to make sure that Wisconsin and all the visibility that's come to Wisconsin translates into something meaningful and lasting and long-term.
Will you be coming here for the big rally anytime soon?
I hope so. I plan to. We've got some meetings coming up in Washington over the weekend, but we'll see how things go. I'd love to get out there.
I think the young people here would love to see you. I think the energy here is something that has to be seen firsthand.
Absolutely.
I appreciate
thanks
your
for
time.
All the attention you've brought to the issue.
Thanks so much. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much, Lisa. Break. We're right back after this.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Don't have a phone? Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
There's a thundercloud exploding, and I'm free at last. Like Joe Hill and Cesar Chavez, who fought in their own time. Like our brothers and our sisters, up and down that picket line. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong. Like the unnamed and unnumbered, who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women, standing up and standing strong.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. We are here in Madison, Wisconsin, where we've been all week, bringing you the every blow from the front lines of the class war. Today, another amazing day of speeches. A lot of people coming out, having their voices heard. Today, the Teamsters had their big trucks out there. A lot of members, a lot of energy. And their president, James Hoffa, came out and he riled the crowd. I got President Hoffa on the line. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, great to be here.
You know, you look at the crowd today, several thousand people came out to greet you. I'm just curious your gut reaction to what happened today.
Well, you know, this is ground zero in this battle. And I'm telling you today, you know, I brought the solidarity of 1.4 million Teamsters, you know, to these public employees that are under attack here in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm telling you, it was exciting. We had a message for them, and the people just tore the place apart, you know, just yelling and being excited, because that's what it's going to take to show that people aren't backing down. This is an anti-union governor here. He's trying to take away their collective bargaining. And the biggest thing is he says there's this gap in the budget. They said, well, okay, we'll cut our wages and we'll cut our fringe benefits to meet that, but save our collective bargaining. And he said no. So it's not about the budget. It's about ideology. It's about being anti-union. But it was a great rally, and we had hundreds of Teamsters show up. There were hundreds of firefighters. So everybody's coming and making this the cause. The cause, because what's going on here affects everybody.
Absolutely.
You know, in labor, when we talk about, you know, somebody going after somebody in labor, we say an injury to one is an injury to all. And, you know, first it's the public employees in Wisconsin, and tomorrow it's right to work, or it's take unions down across the country. So we're fighting back. It was a great day, and I'm just so proud to be here and so excited. It was one of the greatest rallies I've ever seen.
Yeah, you know, the reason we came from Pennsylvania here to Madison, Wisconsin, is because I do believe, as Scott Walker said in his now infamous tape with, you know, this bizarre phone call he thought he was having with the Koch brother, that, yeah, this is the first domino. Wisconsin will be that first domino, and this is going to sweep across the country to Ohio and eventually back home to Pennsylvania. So right here is where this has to be stopped.
Well, I think that's right. And these other governors, these other right-wing governors are watching this in Indiana, Ohio, Missouri. Not Missouri, but Missouri's got a legislature. They got a Democratic governor. But they're all watching to see what happens here. That's why what happens here is a key, because if we back them down in here, we'll back them down everywhere. And what I'm so excited about is all of labor is here. And you can imagine how these public employees feel when they see unions from all over the country coming here. We've got people here from California, from Chicago. They've driven in from everywhere to be part of this. That's what this is all about. They've got firefighters here from the entire state. There were hundreds of them. And they all got up and they rallied. And that's what it's good to be here.
Well, it's about solidarity. You know, as a friend says, solidarity is not just a word. It's an action. And we're seeing solidarity in action here in Madison, Wisconsin.
And they're going to be doing a tremendous rally here. And we're going to make sure the Teamsters are here. I'm looking at, you know, going to Ohio where the battle goes on. I'm talking to our brothers there. The battle goes on in Indiana. There's battles going on everywhere because they think it's the time to take on labor. And you know what? The only thing they understand is we fight back. We save our dignity. And that's what this is all about. Yep. We're talking about nurses here. We're talking about, you know, people have gone to college and are making $50,000 a year, and they want to attack those people. They want to rewrite history as to who caused the crash and why these states are in trouble, why the banks are failing, why there's foreclosures. Well, Wall Street did that, not some nurse. That's what Wall Street did to us, and now we're all paying for it.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because the mean across this country somehow is that asking for better wages, hours, and conditions, that's somehow socialism. But being forced to clean up the mess that Wall Street created, somehow that's patriotic.
Well, they're rewriting history. They're basically getting people to start thinking that it's because of some teacher that taught for 30 years that there's something wrong with her, that she shouldn't get a pension. And they're rewriting history as to who caused the bank failures, who caused the crash that took $11 trillion out of our economy, you know, who caused, you know, all of our houses to go down and over 200 banks to fail. That's all Wall Street. We all know it. We lived it. This is not a long time ago. It's 08 and 09.
Yep.
And absolutely. You were here. I was here. We know what the truth is.
Absolutely.
So let's not try and blame working people that all they want is a decent shake. They want to have a middle-class existence. They want to be able to, you know, teach or take care of kids or be an EMS driver. And when it's all over, they want to have health care. They want to have a decent pension. That's the American way, and we're going to fight for that.
You know, in this phone call that Scott Walker had with whom he believed to be David Koch, he pretty much laid out the fact that this is a national plan to basically repeal the entire 20th century, to go back to the good old days of the 1890s where the robber barons controlled all of the wealth and the working people were basically peasants scurrying for crumbs.
That's exactly right. They want to basically roll the clock back. They use it 1890 is exactly what they want, and they want all of us to be servants and slaves. And they have all the money. And that's what this is about. It's about money. It's about them keeping more. You don't see anybody talking about let's raise the taxes on the rich people, do you?
Absolutely not.
And you don't see anybody talking about the corporations and these guys that make $60, $100 million a year, these CEOs, with their bonuses, the Wall Street guys with $60 or $100 million, why shouldn't they pay more? Why should you go after some poor nurse or some poor teacher that worked all of her life, you know, that makes $50,000 and lives in a clapboard house? Why, we're going to go after her while the other people don't pay. It's un-American. It's not right. And we've got to make sure it doesn't happen.
I'm right there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with President James Hoff of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, my union. I was a Teamster for 21 years and 21 of the great years. And I tell this story often, President Hoff. You know, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. And it was because of my membership in the Teamsters Union, my membership, that I was able to do much better, go to college, move into a neighborhood where now doctors and lawyers live. My children aren't going to see that poverty. And this is a message that that hasn't been told often enough. But I think this here in Madison, Wisconsin, this is going to open up an entirely new generation to labor and to organizing.
Rick, you're right. You know what? What's exciting here, people are bringing their kids here. They're bringing, you know, kids that, you know, that are 5 years old or teenagers. And when somebody asks them what's a union, they know what a union is. And you're seeing retirees here. And they're telling me, you know, they come up and say, I'm a retiree, but you know what? The union was good to me, and I want to make sure other people have what I have. That's what this is about. It's not only the active members who are great, but also the young people that are coming out. And people want to bring their kids to see this because they know this is history.
Absolutely.
We're fighting at a time. You know, somebody said this is a time that we're fighting for the American dream. And they're trying to take away the dream. And we're not going to let them.
Absolutely. You know, in his conversation with who he thought was David Koch, the issue of Patco came up. And Walker's opinion was that Patco, the firing of those workers, showed the Soviet Union that Reagan wasn't a pushover, that he was willing to kick his own people into the street and really go after his own people. So in Walker's mind, I do believe that he seems to think that he's going to show the radical right that he's willing to take on working people. Doesn't make much sense to me, sir.
I think that's exactly right. I think this guy is a stooge of the Koch brothers. You know, they were the largest participant, you know, contributor in his campaign. He's got that Americans for Prosperity, which is another front organization for the Koch operation. They are the ones that underwrote the entire Tea Party operation. And so this whole thing is a charade. This is basically big business creating. It's like the John Birch Society going back to 1964. And they have created this to cause turmoil, to make things flip over, and to basically, like you said, roll the clock back to 1890 and take away everything we have. But the one thing you notice, no one says that the rich pay more taxes. You don't hear that anywhere in their rhetoric.
Nope.
It's all about the working people. It's not about the rich people. It's not about the big corporations with $2 trillion. It's not about the CEOs. It's not about the hedge fund guys. They're not paying their fair share. If there's a problem, let's all pay. Let's make sure we fix it together.
I got two more questions for you. The media, I got to be honest, the media coverage in this this entire thing, in my opinion, has been lacking. The corporate-controlled for-profit media has allowed this story, in my opinion, to go pretty much untold. And when they do talk about it, it's only about those greedy teachers or those greedy state workers who want all these Cadillac health care benefits and these enormously generous pensions. Even though that's not the real case, that's the story they keep peddling.
Well, I credit Ed Schultz. He was the first guy to get this story on the air. And the big networks, NBC, CBS, didn't even come here until he started putting it on the air. And that's what's so important, that we put a focus on it, get the national media in here, for them to see and interview these teachers and the EMS drivers and the nurses and look in their eyes. These are Americans. These are people that have gone to school, that care about their jobs, that are dedicated to their careers. And you see, those are the people. No one can call those people greedy. Those are the people that work every day to make our country great. But you're right. The media has ignored this, and just now they're finally coming up to realize what a great story this is. And this is the story of the day. This is ground zero on our battle for the working middle class.
Along the same lines of that question, doesn't this go to show that we have media consolidated in this country to such a point that if a couple of people decide it doesn't get told, it doesn't get told?
Well, the media is just basically monkey see, monkey do. I mean, you have the regular media, then you got Fox, which is, you know, just a bunch of lunatics. But when you basically get the regular media, you know, they're focused on the sexy thing of Libya and Egypt, and they don't care about what's going on here at home. And this is what's going on here is just as big a story as what's going on overseas. And they have really neglected it, and they haven't really interviewed, you know, the nurses and the EMS and the teachers. That's the story here, and I wish they would do more. And that's why I think it's important we do all the media we can so that every American knows what's going on here in Madison, Wisconsin.
Last question. What do you say to the people back home in Pennsylvania? Because I do believe this is coming. This is coming to our area. It's going to come to Harrisburg. We will be there to fight. But what do you say to the folks in our area?
Well, here, you know, Pennsylvania is a great union, state. And, you know, we lost the Senate race, we lost the governor's race, and I got news for you. This guy is a guarantee. He's talking to Scott Walker. He's watching what's happening here, and they got the same ideas in Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania has always been a bulwark for good unions, and we've got to make sure it doesn't happen there. So the same energy we have here, the same organization of people taking over the Capitol in Harrisburg, we're going to have to do it in Pennsylvania, but we're not going to lose. And that's what's going to take. So every state, we're doing it in Indiana, we're doing it in Ohio, and if it spills over into Pennsylvania, I'll be there, the Teamsters will be there, all of organized labor will be there.
And all of our good friends at Teamsters Local 776 will most certainly be there. Sir, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Thought-provoking, opinionated. Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on.
The guy I've got sitting next to me, Nick Milroy. Nick, I appreciate you taking time for him.
Hey, thanks a lot, Rick.
You look tired, man.
I am. We've been at it for God knows how long now. I think it's over 50 straight hours of debate. We're trying to drag this thing out and make sure that the people's voices are heard in Wisconsin.
This is just absolutely one of the most destructive pieces of writing I think I've ever seen.
It's a terrible bill. You know, in Wisconsin, we call something like this a cow pie, and the only thing that it's good for is fertilizer, as far as I'm concerned.
You know, when you look at this, and so many parts of it destroy really the middle class. I mean, really, they're going after the last vestiges of the middle class, and without a bit of shame.
it really is a shameless proposal. You know, when you look at the amount of money that's going to be sucked out of communities, it's just going to be devastating to local businesses. You know, this isn't a fight between labor and management. This is a fight for the working class of this country, and it's ground zero right here in Wisconsin, and they're trying to spread it across the nation. They've had this on their agenda, the conservative movement, for over 30 years, and they think the stars are, they have the public on their side, but they're finding out different here in Wisconsin.
And an amazing, amazing happening here. But here's the thing, you know, I keep hearing the mainstream media saying that Governor Walker ran on stealing rights away from workers. And I guess I don't remember that. I'm not from Wisconsin. But did he run on we're going to steal the rights of collective bargaining?
Absolutely not. You know, this wasn't mentioned once during the campaign that he was looking at repealing collective bargaining rights. I mean, this is a fundamental right that we believe in Wisconsin. This is at the core of our values. And we've had 50 years of labor peace in Wisconsin. We've had a strong economy, and much of it is because of having collective bargaining rights for public sector employees.
Yeah, and again, you know, you go back to this phone call, and I know you've heard the phone call. I think everybody now has. Where your governor, in very, very calm tones, very arrogant tones, laid out what we already knew, but he reassured us of just how vile their plans are.
Well, I can't tell you how disturbing that phone call was to me, to my friends and neighbors, when you hear the governor of a great state like the state of Wisconsin say that they were debating whether or not they should incite violence by having people in the crowds acting as thugs is unbelievable to me.
So today, all day today, for the last 50 hours, as you said, you've been debating this thing. Where does this end up? I mean, the reality is you're making all of your points, but they're not listening. Walker has made it very clear he doesn't really care what you have to say.
Well, it's been a one-sided debate, and I think if you listen to the phone call, you hear that the governor is calling representatives and senators and twisting their arm every single night. Anybody who's thinking about wavering on the right-hand side of the equation here is getting their arm twisted by a strong-arm governor who's been, since day one in office, has been trying to consolidate as much power in the governorship. You know, there's a reason why we have a legislature, and these guys are abrogating their responsibilities to make sure we have separations of power in Wisconsin.
How resolved are the fabulous 14, the 14 senators who went to Illinois? How resolved do you think they are at this point?
I pray to God every night that they're not going to come back until the governor sits down and shows a little bit of leadership in this state, because we need somebody to bring people back together. You don't have hundreds of thousands of people come to a city that's not much bigger than that and protest and rally for their rights at the state capitol for such a sustained period of time. You know, the governor needs to wake up and realize this is a moment in time that calls for his leadership to sit down and do what we've always done in Wisconsin, and that's bring people together to solve our problems.
You know, as you brought up their rights, all we keep hearing in the mainstream media is that this is about money, this is about balancing the budget, because you know times are tough and we need to tighten our belt and we all need to sacrifice a little bit. That's the mean I keep hearing. Somehow the media has spun it to where asking for a little bit more in your paycheck, asking for a little bit more of the wealth that workers create, somehow that's socialism. But tightening your belt and sacrificing, especially those of us at the bottom, that's patriotic.
Yeah, you know, it is a shame that the only people who are ever asked to sacrifice are working class people. They have been sacrificing, and they're going to continue to sacrifice. But when you cut that amount of money out of everyday people's paychecks, you're going to destroy local economies. I don't know what kind of economist is giving Governor Walker advice, but anybody who would tell him to suck this much money out of local economies has got to be nuts. I mean, we're talking about austerity measures that have ruined economies in other countries very recently.
Does the state of Wisconsin need this kind of drastic action, though? I'm looking at some of the numbers. Your pension liabilities are what, about 99.7% funded?
Right.
Did I read that right? Where's the crisis? I'm missing where the... I understand, you know, like in Pennsylvania, we've got a $5 billion budget hole.
Right.
We've got a huge problem. I'm not seeing that here in Wisconsin to take these kind of drastic measures.
Well, exactly. You know, we do have some budget problems, but they're not as drastic as a lot of other states. Last session, the Democrats balanced a $6 billion budget deficit in Wisconsin, and we got our state back on track. We're starting to see increased employment. This is a scheme to undermine the working class people of this country, and it's starting right here in Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Representative Nick Milroy. He's one of the state representatives here in Wisconsin, one of the brave people on the front line, what I've been calling the front line of the class war, because I'll tell you, Nick, if you don't stop it here, if you don't stop Scott Walker right here in Pennsylvania, John Kasich is going to take the next step. Tom Corbett will be next behind Chris Christie. I don't think this is the brainchild of your governor. I think this came out of a Washington think tank. I think this is the playbook of the ultra-extreme right wing.
That's exactly right. This is right out of the Heritage Foundation Bible, I mean. I don't know if we're going to be able to stop it here in Wisconsin, but we're going to fight it until our last breath.
Is there any truth in the I heard someone out in the lobby say, or out in the rotunda say that one of the Heritage Foundation people are the ones who are actually going to be getting a portion of the privatized power plants that you guys are in this bill talking about selling off?
I think they're referring to the Koch brothers who were infamously tied to that prank phone call to the governor the other night, but the governor did hire somebody to run the Department of Health Services here in Wisconsin who previously worked for the Heritage Foundation and pretty much said that states like Wisconsin should opt out of Medicaid from the federal government, which would just be drastic to low-income people that rely on some sort of subsistence for their health care.
Yeah, they say hindsight's 20/20. You look back to the November elections just passed. And for me, the message was jobs. We want jobs. You're not doing a good enough job on the economy. Do you think the voters of Wisconsin, I know this is kind of an up-in-the-air question, but do you think the voters of Wisconsin voted for this kind of extremism?
Absolutely not. I think we're going to see some major recall efforts going on across Wisconsin. They want a governor that's going to be focused on creating jobs here in Wisconsin and not attacking middle-class families. And right now we have a governor that's not willing to sit down with the people of Wisconsin. He's seen them come in droves from every corner of the state telling them that they want to protect their rights, and he's not listening to any of it.
Well, what he's doing, he's poo-pooing it off, saying, oh, those are just out-of-towners.
Well,
they're not out-of-towners because I got a hotel room with no problem.
Yeah, that's a bunch of hogwash. These are our friends and neighbors from every corner of the state of Wisconsin. And I'll tell you what, you know, a lot of these people are hurting. A lot of people in the building trades are unemployed. We have pretty high unemployment in a lot of our larger communities. And every day the governor wastes his time trying to trample on the rights of everyday citizens is a day we're not creating jobs in Wisconsin. He needs to get our state back on track.
Let's talk about that. Two major initiatives. Part of this bill, one of them could cost the state some certification for the forestry industry, could cost tens of thousands of jobs, as I've read.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows that agriculture is one of the biggest sectors in Wisconsin's economy. In fact, it's the largest sector. But the second largest sector of Wisconsin's economy is forestry. The northern half of the state is thickly forest, and we have a thriving forestry industry. And the reason for that is because we have this FFC certification. And if you pick up any magazine in the country, you flip it over, you're going to see this FFC certification. Well, the group that gives out that certification, part of that certification process is making sure you adhere to international labor standards, one of which is allowing
the right to collective
bargain.
Yeah, because I look at that, and this is a big industry, almost $21 billion for this state, and to somehow jeopardize that for some bizarre ideology, for some hatred that they have for working people, to me just seems short-sighted.
It would be devastating for northern Wisconsin if we lost our competitive edge in the forest products market. We can't compete with the cheap paper that comes out of China and other countries. The only reason we have competition is because we have sustainable forests that allow the people in the chain to have collective bargaining rights.
Yeah,
and you take those away from those people, and we're going to lose that certification, and there's not a magazine in the country that would buy paper from Wisconsin.
And that's not a good thing. You bring up China, though. You know, that's a whole argument for a whole other day that somewhere on the federal level needs to be taken care of. as we move forward, especially with Wisconsin being a major, one of the leading manufacturing states, you know, the little manufacturing we still do in this country.
That's true. You know, another big segment of our economy is manufacturing, and we've been able to really hold the line on that, and it's mainly because we have so many small manufacturers that do so many, you know, real technical things, but it's real unfortunate that a lot of our manufacturing jobs have been shipped overseas, and it has a lot to do with these federal regulations that have been put in place over the last 10, 15, 20 years.
So wouldn't you think it'd be energy better spent for your governor to go to Washington, lobby them to help protect some of your industry instead of destroying your working conditions? Or maybe that's the plan. Maybe you tear the working conditions down to where we're working at the same wages and conditions as the Chinese, and we'll be even more competitive.
Yeah, that would make a pretty poor quality of life for a lot of people. You know, we value things in Wisconsin, and one of the things we value most is our high quality of life and our high educational standards. You know, we don't want to have a race to the bottom here in the Midwest.
I'm right there with you. You know, I look around this, this amazing event, and one of the chants I keep hearing is this is what democracy looks like. And as you walk around this building, you see that they've set up a child care center because as a democracy, as a group of people, they decided that they need something like that. There's a place where you can get food. They, as a society, just a little microcosm here, they decided we need to feed people. I've heard they're setting up a medical area where if someone feels ill, there's going to be care right here. Maybe Walker should take a lesson from that.
It is pretty amazing. You know, another thing that I've heard from several people is how clean the people rallying for their rights have kept the Capitol building. Every night they're out there scrubbing the floors themselves because this is a people's building. And when they're here, they're going to respect it, and they want Scott Walker to respect it, too.
You know, there was a girl on her hands and knees scrubbing like crazy, and I told her I was going to videotape it and take a picture of it and send it to her parents.
Hey, that'd be something else.
So that, you know, because it's amazing that, again, as you pointed out, just an absolutely amazing thing. And what you guys have done here, amazing. Thank you. What last question I've got for you, it's not really a question. It's more of what do we tell the folks back home? Looking at what you've accomplished here, if this fight comes to Pennsylvania, what's the message?
Well, I'll tell you what the message is, and I know myself and my colleagues, we're not taking any credit for what's happened in Wisconsin. The only reason why we're still here fighting is because the people of Wisconsin stood up and spoke out, and if this spreads to any other state like Pennsylvania, you better make sure that the working people of that state stand up and say, we're not going to put up with this. And that's exactly what the citizens of Wisconsin are doing here today.
And they have really thrown down the gauntlet in this latest battle in the class war. Representative Milroy, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Keep up the fight. And nothing but the best of luck, brother.
Hey, thank you, Rick.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out our website at thericksmithshow.com for all of our interviews and all of our discussions here from Madison, Wisconsin. We're wrapping up an entire week here. It has been just a phenomenal week. This is something that I'm going to remember, and I think all of the people who have been a part of this are going to remember for a lifetime, because this is history in the making. And when we look back in 20, 30 years, I'm hoping that this will be that moment, that watershed moment, where finally you have some unity. You have people beginning to come together. And I'm hoping this is like an epidemic that spreads, where we start to look at the policies of the right, the policies of the conservative movement, and begin to question exactly what their motives are. And I think that phone call, I go back to that phone call, which I think is so important. I go back to that phone call, how easy the words came off his tongue, basically laying out exactly what we've already known. Just filling in the blanks. We've known this for a while. Personally, I would be shocked if he's not recalled in a year. I'll be surprised if he makes it the year. There's talk on the ground here of the eight members of the House of Representatives being recalled, who can be recalled immediately. There's talk of that. It's going to be interesting. And this, like the pay raise, and I hearken back to that pay raise, this is something that has shaken people awake. This is something that has caught their attention, caught their ire, and I don't think it's going to go away for a while. This was a massive overreach. Even people who generally would side with the governor on maybe cracking down on state workers, maybe making them pay more for their health care, maybe taking some of their pension benefits away. Some of those folks, yeah, they would agree with doing that. But this overreaching theft of their rights, I don't know many people who were in favor of this. The editorials you read here, not in favor of it. Now, understand, you know, people think that, you know, they're too generous of benefits, and there's an education curve that needs to happen. There's a discussion that needs to happen. These people who are doing these jobs, what do they make? Is it something that the private sector could do better? I say no. And I had a conversation, and I'll tell this again real quick. I had a conversation with a gas station owner today. And he was complaining that a state worker told him he was going to retire and take the exact same job he's been doing for the last 30 years at double the salary. And the guy's like, well, if he's retiring from the state, why is he taking that job in the private sector? You go, well, here's the thing. The state is privatizing that job. In the private sector, how much would it cost to get somebody with the experience and the education necessary to do that job? And now we have found out. Double. And when I explained it like that, he goes, you know, you're right. I said, you know, all of these state jobs just aren't a bunch of, a bunch of high school graduates who stepped out of the high school and said, I'm here, take me. No, these are people who have gone to college. They've trained. This is their specialty. This is their profession. That's worth something. And what's gone on at least the last two or three years is we've had this demonization of these people because they're not going to fight back. Again, it goes back to who can you kick that's not going to kick you back. And this is what's happened here. We've allowed the right, we've allowed the mainstream for-profit corporate-controlled media to beat up on these people. And for what? So they could privatize the job, make a profit. And again, I go back to this. Please, show me one of these privatization schemes that has benefited you and me. Show me one of them. Because every time I see this stuff happen, I end up losing. You end up losing. We end up paying more for a service, or we don't get it. I want boring, professional bureaucrats doing the work of the state. I don't want political patronage. I don't want cronies doing the job, which is where this is taking us back to. You do away with collective bargaining rights. You do away with the security clauses. You do away with all that. You end up having state workers who have their jobs at the whim of the person sitting in that governor's chair. Going back to the 50s and 60s, well, and even before that, but going backwards. And here in this state, where the motto is forward, I don't think they want to go back to those days. And I know for me in Pennsylvania, I don't want to see that happen either. I want experienced, trained, well-educated people doing the work of the state, doing my work. Because that's how it's done best. And, you know, in wrapping this week up, the things that I have seen, the people that I have met, truly a treasured week. And I hope you've enjoyed what we've done here. And it's all archived on our site at thericksmithshow.com. You can download our podcast because this is important stuff. And when it comes home, we need to be ready. We need to be active. And we need to, when it happens, get out into the streets. Exactly what I've been saying for a couple of years now. Nothing changes without boots on the ground. Nothing changes without voices in the hall. Nothing changes without you, without massive numbers of people. And that's what we're going to see tomorrow, and we're going to bring you some video and photos tomorrow as they happen from here in Madison, Wisconsin, because, again, all across the country, there are rallies in support of these Wisconsin public sector workers. In Harrisburg, noon, at the Capitol, The Rally to Save the American Dream, our friends over at Keystone Progress is putting that together. I hope everybody will go out. Now, there's going to be a counter-protest, rally, whatever you want to call it, by the T-Twizzler think tank, Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania or whatever it is. They're going to come out with their handfuls and their misspelled signs. Be nice to them. Be nice to them. But the one thing that I've learned here in Wisconsin is you can nice somebody into walking away. And that's what's happened. They brought busloads of T-Twizzlers in here with their cameras and their troublemaking, and they left with cookies and a smile. And that is a lesson for all of us. Instead of standing there arguing, pointing your finger back and screaming, go, here's a cookie to go with your tea. That would be the way to do it. Instead of, you know, getting yourself in a situation where you're sliced and diced and now you're on the front page of all of their crazy websites as that union thug. No union thugs here, man. It's just a great event, an amazing family environment. This is truly, truly what democracy looks like.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold.